Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, November, is it the 13th? Tuesday, November 13th, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. As usual at our regular business meetings, we're going to begin with a proclamation or with proclamations and resolutions. And I would like to ask Jeff Baker to come join me up at the podium. Whereas in 2012, an estimated 44,000 people will be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in the United States, and whereas a similar number will die from the disease, and whereas pancreatic cancer is one of the deadliest cancers, is the fourth leading cause of cancer death in the United States, and is the only major cancer with a five-year relative survival rate in the single digits at just 6%. And whereas when symptoms of pancreatic cancer present themselves, it is usually too late for an optimistic prognosis, and 74% of pancreatic cancer patients die within the first year of their diagnosis, while 94% of pancreatic cancer patients die within the first 5 years of their diagnosis. And whereas, of all the racial and ethnic groups in the United States, African Americans have the highest incidence of pancreatic cancer, between 34 and 70% higher than other groups. And whereas, approximately 1,130 deaths will occur in North Carolina alone in 2012, that is to say, just this year, 1,130 people in North Carolina will die of pancreatic cancer. And whereas there is no cure for pancreatic cancer, and there have been no significant improvements in survival rates in the past 40 years, excuse me. And whereas the federal government invests significantly less money in pancreatic cancer research than it does in any other of the leading cancer killers, and pancreatic cancer research constitutes approximately only 2% of the National Cancer Institute's federal research funding, a figure far too low given the severity of the disease, its mortality rate, and how little is known about how to arrest it. And whereas the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network is the first and only national patient advocacy organization that serves the pancreatic cancer community in the Triangle and nationwide, by focusing its efforts on public policy research, funding, patient services, and public awareness and education related to developing effective treatments and a cure for pancreatic cancer. And whereas the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network and its affiliates in the Triangle support those patients currently battling pancreatic cancer, as well as those who have lost their lives to the disease, and are committed to nothing less than a cure to this disease. And whereas the good health and well-being of the residents of Carrboro, and indeed of North Carolina, are enhanced as a result of increased awareness about pancreatic cancer and research into early detection, causes, and effective treatments, now therefore be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, the mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the month of November 2012 as Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month in the town of Carrboro. And here to receive this proclamation is our own transportation planner, Jeff Brubaker.
Thanks, Mayor Chilton, for that proclamation, and thanks to the board for hearing it. I'm speaking as a citizen tonight and as a volunteer for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. I got involved in it after my uncle passed away from pancreatic cancer, and I know that there's a number of other people who have had family members who have been affected by it. It's a really nasty, stubborn cancer. As the proclamation said, the survival rate after 5 years is still 6%. It was 6% 40 years ago. So just imagine some of the other diseases and illnesses which we've made progress on globally, what they were like 40 years ago, and imagine if we hadn't made any progress on them. So there's some other bad news that wasn't in the proclamation, which is couched in some very good news. The good news is that By 2020, four of the major cancers, the deaths are projected to decrease. So lung cancer, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, and prostate cancer. So that's great news, but the bad news is that the deaths from pancreatic cancer are projected to double by 2030. So it's really important to support research into treatment and cures. And if anybody wants to find out more information, the website is pancan.org, pancan.org. And I've got a few fact sheets here if anybody needs any more information. So thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
I didn't bore you with any transportation.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Since this is a regular business meeting for us, we will now hear petitions on matters that are not on our regularly printed agenda. I have one person signed up, Peggy Mish, if you would come up. And if that might be your car alarm going off in the parking lot, then now would be the time to just take a look. That's fine. It's no judgment. Appreciate your taking a look into that. All right. Peggy.
Carrboro and Mayor and Alderman, because Carrboro and its residents have a stake in a pending policy to be developed for bus ads on Chapel Hill Transit, some of us appeal to the Alderman to make known to the public its stand on whether the buses constitute a public forum allowing freedom of speech. The role of the Chapel Hill Transit Partners, made up of Carolyn Elfrond, UNC Vice Associate Vice Chancellor, Campus Service, Chapel Hill Town Council members Ed Harrison and Jim Ward, and Carrboro Alderman Dan Coleman and Lydia Lavelle, is not clear to many of us in the community. The Orange County Peace Coalition voted unanimously to support Chapel Hill Transit as a public forum and to ask the Carrboro Alderman to take such a stand.
Thanks,
Alderman Coleman.
As board members know, Lydia and I, who represent the town on the Transit Partners Committee, have been keeping up with this issue. And I was endeavoring to find out from the Chapel Hill town manager exactly what had transpired at the Chapel Hill council meeting, which was kind of confusing in terms of what we were hearing publicly. So masochist that I am, I actually this afternoon went and watched the entire hour-long discussion on the Chapel Hill Council and determined that, yes, they are asking the Transit Partners Committee, on which Lydia and I serve, along with others from the university and the Chapel Hill, to comment on the bus ad policy. And knowing that Peggy was coming tonight, and I really appreciate the Peace Coalition bringing this issue forward, I've put together a short resolution, which I'd like to present to the board, that would give Lydia and I very clear direction in terms of what we take to the Transit Partners Committee meeting November 27th. And so this resolution is, whereas a constitutional right to freedom of speech is meaningless without forums within which to exercise it, and whereas public forums are being diminished in the United States as a result of privatization and increasingly restrictive policies at all levels of government, and whereas the town of Carrboro has a long tradition of broadly supporting the opportunity for and the exercise of free public discourse, now, therefore, the Carrboro Board of Aldermen affirms its support for policies that create a public forum and support the exercise of First Amendment rights within the Chapel Hill transit system.
I'll second that. Could I add a friendly amendment, Dan?
Yeah, you could try.
I could try. I just feel that in the conversations that Chapel Hill Transit's made, the arguments that have been presented and the reason behind having to open up our buses to advertisement, there's an unquestioned there's an unquestioning of commercial speech as being neutral, and I think it would be important to include something in there speaking to that. And so I'd like to offer, whereas commercial speech already has many advantages over non-commercial speech, and it's just because we are bombarded everywhere, and that hasn't been brought up as part of the conversation.
Well, Sammy, even though I 100% support the sentiment that you're expressing, and I agree with you with all the problems with commercial speech and the power it has in our society, I specifically tried to keep this resolution very simply focused on this idea of a public forum and how that relates to the exercise of First Amendment rights. So I'd like to not put that in at that time. I think there's a lot more we can talk about in regard to the whole bus advertising policy, as we did a year ago in regard to social responsibility and the local businesses and that kind of thing, but I think we should come back to. But for tonight, I'd like to stay focused on that, so if you don't mind.
All right. Sure. So just to follow, just so we stay within the kind of what Robert's rules contemplates, it's been moved that we have an amendment here to the motion. Offered as friendly, but declined. Well, first of all, actually, is there a second to Dan's motion?
I'll second.
Overall?
Sammy already seconded.
Oh, Sammy seconded. Okay.
Seconded.
So the amendment was declined by the mover. Is there a second to the amendment?
Second.
Okay.
All right. The amendment has been seconded. All those in favor of amending the main motion, in other words, of adding the clause that Sammy had suggested, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. And and those opposed?
Nay.
Okay. All right. very good. Then we're on to the main motion. So Dan's motion was moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you all.
And I know that this means that there can be. I was most disturbed by the idea that I had the right to get on the bus and not be offended. You know, and I don't think free speech means that you have the right to not be offended. They were even saying in there that they didn't want to create a situation where people could be hurt, have their feelings hurt, or be offended. And so I fully expect to get on the bus and see signs that vastly disagree with what I believe and with what a lot of the members of this board believe, and that's a good thing, you know? That's a good thing. So the first pro-fracking sign, I don't want the community jumping up in arms and saying they can't have pro-fracking signs on our buses, because that's what free speech means, that you are free to be offended. So I want us to remember that as we move forward.
Yeah, I'm glad Jackie said that. During the weekend, looking through the packet and thinking about this issue, you know, I was thinking, you know, just a year ago when there was a big push for Amendment 1, if there were bus ads that supported Amendment 1, little could offend me more. And how would I feel about that? North Carolina has, you know, moved further to the right than I'd like to see. And this last election really upset me. And I anticipate there will be groups that will use this opportunity to chip away at our progressive position in this area of the state. We've seen that movement over the last 8 to 10 years. So with that in mind, I found it hard to say that do I really want to tolerate something that would offend me to the core, and but that's what we have to stand for. So thank you, Dan.
I just wanted to underscore, the first time we looked at this policy, I voted against it precisely because even though it is a public forum, we are clearly at a disadvantage given the amount of resources that corporations and for-profit and commercial advertisers have. And I just want to make us hear or be cognizant of that reality, that we may be with good intentions trying to create a public forum, but we have to be real about the fact and disadvantage that we have in the resources that we can wield and the messages that can be heard. And that was the spirit of why I voted against advertisements on the bus to begin with, and why I offer this amendment today.
I think I appreciate that. I actually think the events of last Tuesday give us some reason to be at least not hopeless, let's just say, or not a reason for us not to despair, and that it's clear that corporate money can buy a lot of communication power, but that the democratizing, with a small d, effect of the internet and other innovations in communication technology mean that there's only so much BS that the American public is going to buy into in the future. I hope, at least. I hope that's the implication. And that's not to take anything away from the point you're making, Sammy, but rather just to say that there's reason to be perhaps a little bit optimistic about the way that the situation is changing. And I think that from my point of view, the reason that we ought to have bus advertising as a public forum rather than the kind of convoluted and frankly, troubling policy that has perhaps been suggested by some in Chapel Hill is precisely because it's okay to be confronted with information that we disagree with.
Yeah.
It's okay to be confronted. In fact, it's not only okay to be confronted by things that we disagree with, it's constructive to be confronted by things that we disagree with. And when we are challenged by information or claims or assertions that we disagree with, it's what helps us to understand why do we believe in the things that we do believe in. And as Dr. King pointed out in the letter from Birmingham Jail, the enemy is not really the KKK. The enemy is not really the people who would be straightforward about their prejudice. The enemy is those who believe in justice but will not stand up for the things that they believe in. And when we are confronted by the truth and the reality of what hateful people really believe in, that's what helps inspire most of the rest of us to take action on the things that we truly believe in. So there's a lot of value to being confronted by things that we disagree with. And obviously that concept applies to a lot more than advertisements on buses. But anyway, hopefully this in some small way contributes to more of us thinking critically about what it is that our government does on both sides. All sides. All right. Mr. Manager, I believe that... Oh, excuse me. But that's on the odd months on our agenda. So we have a couple of people who need to receive their charges as new members of advisory boards. If you want to call, I don't actually know who's here, but okay. If you'll call them. Oh, actually, I do. I'm begging your pardon. Melissa Kim, if you would come up and stand before our town clerk, Kathy Wilson.
Melissa is a recent appointee to the Transportation Advisory Board. As a Transportation Advisory Board member, I will, one, assist in the execution of studies, advise, and make recommendations to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen concerning all matters relating to the transportation within the town of Carrboro and the surrounding area, including but not limited to the need for the construction, operation, relocation, or improvement of streets, sidewalks, and bikeways, as well as the establishment and improvement of alternative methods of mass transportation. 2, report to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen as requested by the board and undertake such studies or perform such duties as the board may request from time to time. And 3, take any other action authorized by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. All right, just get your signature. And then you can meet the mayor and the board. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank
you. Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
All right. Catherine Adamson has recently been appointed to the Carrboro Planning Board. If you'll come up and stand before our town clerk.
As a planning board member, I will, one, make studies and recommend to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen plans, goals, and objectives related to the growth, development, and redevelopment of the town and the surrounding extraterritorial planning area. 2, develop and recommend to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen policies, ordinances, administrative procedures, and other means for carrying out plans in a coordinated and efficient manner. 3, make recommendations to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen concerning proposed conditional use permits and proposed zoning map changes as provided by sections 15-57 and 15-322 of the Carrboro Land Use Ordinance, or perform any other duties as assigned by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. Thank you very much. Then you can meet the mayor and board.
All right, and Eve Barkley has recently been appointed to the Arts Committee.
As an Arts Committee member, I will, one, recommend to the Board of Aldermen a policy for the selection of art to be displayed in or on public facilities, 2, coordinate arrangements to have artwork displayed on town property in conjunction with the staff of the Recreation and Parks Department, 3, work collaboratively with the community on projects related to the arts. Members of the Arts Committee may assist in community fundraising activities, but any funds received by the committee or by members acting in their official capacity must be accounted for, and all expenditures by the committee must be made in accordance with the provisions of the Local Government Budget and Fiscal Control Act. Such funds may be received and expended by the town only for purposes for which the town is statutorily authorized to expend public funds. And 4, report to the board as requested and perform such additional duties as the board may request from time to time. Just get your signature there. Thank you very much and welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard. Nice to meet you. Thank you. All right. I believe that now brings us to our consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, members of the board, there are 6 items on the consent agenda. The meeting minutes from October the 16th. The second item is a request to waive the bidding procedures for the purchase of a front-end loader refuse truck from Franklin County, Virginia. Item number three is amendments to your 2013 board meeting schedule. That would make our meetings in January the 15th, the 22nd, and the 29th, and it would also cancel the March 26th public hearing. Item number four is a resolution approving a partnership with the Arts Center to apply for a National Endowment for the Arts Our Town grant for cultural planning and design. Item number five is about, I think, five or six recommendations for changes to the Carborough Wise program. And item number six would appoint Matthew Prentice to the Orange County Human Services Commission.
I'd like to pull number four, please.
I wanted to pull number five.
All right. Is there a motion for items one through three and six?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for one through three and six. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Item four, what was the question?
It wasn't a question. I just wanted to make sure to draw the board and the community's attention to this exciting grant possibility that the town of Carborough is entering into in partnership with the Arts Center. It is for a very significant grant for a program called Our Town, and will help to develop the supporting infrastructure for the arts in Carborough. It's going to involve a great deal of community input, as there's already been a grant committee put together that's working on it, but there will be lots of room for community input, and the Arts Commission has already talked about the input that it would like to have, and so the Arts Commission will be part of that. There's an incredible paper. It's a long paper, but it's really interesting, called How Arts Work, and it's put out by the National Endowment for the Arts, and it was used. We had a last Saturday, the Arts Commission had a strategic planning summit, the second one we've had, and used How Arts Work as kind of a base for the summit. And the Arts Commission, I know we're under the radar a whole lot now, but are working very closely with economic development and other entities in moving the arts forward and getting beyond simply deciding what gets hung on the walls, which is a great thing, but moving beyond that. I'd like to ask Kathy, I know she has that because Art sent it to us, if you could forward that thing, the paper, How Arts Work. Mm-hmm. It's really great, and it has some very interesting graphics in it that show how different parts of the arts work together and how things intermingle. So that's real exciting, and that's going on and is going to be part of working on this Our Town grant. The other thing is that not this past Saturday, but the one before that, we had a summit of the all of the different entities that are involved with Rec and Parks. All of the festivals are kind of spin-offs from Rec and Parks, as are a lot of the things going on with arts. And there's not an awareness that that's all tied together. So we had like 18 people show up for a couple hours to talk about how we interact with each other with the arts. And we certainly had economic development at the table, too, and how Rec and Parks is really a key element in the economic development and, more importantly, in the community building here. So that all ties into including not just the arts, but the other parts of Rec and Parks tie into this grant application that's going on. I was going to wait till the end of the meeting to tell you about the summit, but it all kind of ties in together. I wanted you to be aware of that. This paper is just amazing. It's really neat, and it's stuff that we've talked about for a long time. So I'd like to commend that to you. We've got a really active Arts Commission, and we are reinvigorating the Rec and Parks Commission with people from all the different festival-related kind of stuff that's going on. And that'll all tie into this Our Town grant, for which we really need to thank Art of the Arts Center. So just wanted to update you. Thanks.
Thanks, Jackie.
I wasn't as aware as I should have been at that. So It's worth bringing up.
Very cool.
All right. So I'll take that as a motion, Jackie, second, to pass the resolution. Seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed.
Thank you.
Matter passed unanimously. Item five, who had a question?
I did.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I had a question for the attorney about, it's the recommendation number three to expand the program to homes in the planning jurisdiction. And if I read the packet correctly, Chapel Hill is doing that.
It's my understanding.
And I mean, I read your interpretation, which says it has to be in the city's territorial jurisdiction. But then you wrote that we could enter into an agreement with the county if we wanted to expand this. Is that what Chapel Hill did?
I don't think so.
So they just, their lawyer interpreted it differently.
I don't
than,
know that they asked their lawyer.
Oh.
I'm not saying they did or they didn't.
Don't pin him down too
I'm
far
I'm just
now.
Asking because the funds need to be spent.
I know why you're asking, but I'm just saying.
Well, the funds need to be spent by May of 2013, so, and this would increase participation, which is why I was asking the question of what we might want to do if we want to have the funds expended and more people have access or not.
I just have a hard time reading the language other than what it says. It, in the statute, seems to me to be fairly clear that you're allowed to do this in the municipal corporate limits.
It's clear. And then your explanation about what we could do if we wanted to
but it's
shift that is clear, too. I was just putting it out there.
I think it's a good point because it you can do things that, if you don't ask sometimes.
You can do it, even if you do ask, and then I just, you know.
Sometimes you can do that.
I don't have a vote on the board. I just tell you what the statute says. Do what you want to do.
I have an older brother, so I learned that lesson from him. But, okay. So what do we need to do then?
I don't know if we want to entertain this idea.
To Michelle's point, I mean, what it says here in our packet is that, you know, one way to maybe be able to offer this to our properties in the ETJ would be to somehow partner with the county to, if we end up not being able to spend our money. Now, whether that could all come together in a way that we could get it done by.
What's the deadline again? It's in 2013?
The money has to be spent by May.
May.
Extended by May of 2013.
Well, let's.
And where are people outside of the in the planning jurisdiction wiser? I mean, there are fewer people there. It's just curious to me that you'd think where there are more people will want the service.
Well, but I think the point is that anyway, whatever, whoever it is, that
right.
I guess put it this way: energy saved outside the planning jurisdiction is pretty much the same as energy saved within the planning jurisdiction.
I'm just curious to know why that is.
Well,
there
I
may
guess
be
we don't have
some
enough
older
people.
Homes,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just
there's,
the
and
net
there's just a limit to the number of people.
So, do
who
we want to ask for staff to
approach the county? Yeah, I think so.
I would like that.
Okay, so I'll take that as a motion.
I'll second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we approach the county about partnering with them to expand the scope of the program a little bit. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Does that include the original motion as well?
Presumably so. Does it? Yes.
I just want to thank staff for the creative looking into the marketing strategy. This grassroots approach makes a lot of sense. There are so many conservation and efficiency, low-hanging fruit opportunities that it makes a lot of sense to combine those kinds of programs with this other one, because that is part of the reason why people aren't doing this. People don't realize how much you can be saving with energy. So,
good point, Sammy. Yeah. All right, it's been moved and seconded that for the main motion for the resolution that's before us, and also to approach the county. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Thank
all right.
You.
I believe that brings us to item D1, a request to set a public hearing for the 901 West Main Street rezoning from R10 to B1 GCZ. I received, and I think aldermen were copied on it, an email from Jan Halley, who is the applicant for this rezoning, requesting some additional time before having this public hearing. This morning she emailed to say that they were still in discussion with some of the neighbors and that they would prefer to have a public hearing in January. Mm-hmm. Does that seem feasible, Mr. Manager?
That's my understanding, Mr.
Okay.
Mayor.
So I would like to ask the question, is there someone who would like to move to set this as for our January public hearing date?
I have a question about that, which is whether, you know, since things are in flux with them, if whether it would make sense to wait and make sure that they, in fact, are ready to do it in January. I guess we can always postpone it.
But. Well, I kind of contemplated that question earlier today, and I guess my feeling is that both the applicant and the neighbors need to be on. My feeling is that this issue needs to get resolved at some point, and that I don't want to see this discussion. I do want to see this discussion go on, but I don't want to see it go on forever. And so I would like to. Mm-hmm. I think the suggestion that we set January as a public hearing date is a constructive one in terms of making sure that the conversation actually is moving forward.
Yeah,
you follow me? Okay.
Is that the 29th then?
That would be the 29th based on the change you made today.
I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we schedule the public hearing for January 29th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I know we've been talking about mediation and going back and forth and then a facilitated discussion, and Jan's reason, at least in the email, for wanting to postpone the hearing was because of negotiations with the neighbors. And we're aware of one meeting that happened on Friday, and I think another one was supposed to happen today or no?
No, it did not. And apparently when I sent that email out, things had changed, and the one on today had already been foregone. So Friday, that meeting did happen.
But do you,
I'm just wondering, given that we have more. So there are other conversations that are planned that you're aware of between the neighbors and the applicant or not? Because that was her reason, so I just want to clarify.
I'm not aware of specific dates, but I'm aware of an intention to have some further discussions, yeah.
And do we feel like those need to be facilitated or not, or do we want to add that to some other agenda item because we went back and forth about it?
Well, I guess my impression is that those conversations are happening and that they remain somewhat constructive without any facilitators. So,
yeah, okay. I spoke with Jan this afternoon after we got this email, and the impression I got from that conversation is that, as Mark said, the conversations are ongoing. She's like optimistic about positive outcomes and did not express any need for facilitation. She felt like they were doing okay, the group of them who are talking. So I think we're okay. They're okay for now.
I don't know that some of the neighbors know about those continued negotiations, so it would be helpful for the manager to keep updating us if about whatever meetings are set, as that's appropriate, because I think maybe she hasn't communicated with them, but they aren't necessarily
aware. She must have communicated with some of them if she's meeting with
them. On Friday, but not today, and so I'm just bringing up that she's saying that there will be future negotiations. We've talked a lot about mediation and a facilitated discussion, and we're postponing the public hearing so she can negotiate. So I'm just.
Well, we're not. I'm not postponing so that she can negotiate. I'm postponing so that negotiations can happen.
So the neighbors are not aware of those of continued negotiations. Jan is. So there's clearly some miscommunication. That's what I'm saying.
And it can't be handled.
So you've spoken to some neighbors who think it's like all settled. And
no, who are not aware of negotiations that are going to continue to happen. Mm-hmm.
Well, wouldn't that also be incumbent upon the neighbors at a meeting with Jan to share to the rest of the neighbors?
Depending on, I think it would be up to Jan.
I
just think we need to be clear.
I mean, I guess. Yes, go ahead.
I think there's a fair amount of misunderstanding about the mediation process and what it involves and why the process is important. And why the process involves the mediators going out and doing some assessments and getting all sides before bringing the groups together. I don't think that this is the time or the place to discuss it because we're in the heat of the moment. But I would like us sometime in the spring to have a conversation about mediation in these very heated entrenched kinds of problems. I think there certainly is a role for it, and I think it does end up saving money. I think it is a process that we have used some in the past to get out of entrenched situations. It's not something you use all the time, but it's kind of like surgery as opposed to medication. You know, there is a time and a place for it, and it needs to be done right. And we have people in our community who have a national reputation for doing mediation, who do mediation training. It is not something that just a group of volunteers can step up and say, oh, I'll do it, or a group of interns, oh, I'll do it. That would be like saying that volunteers or interns could do legal work, or who could do counseling, or who could do teaching. It is a trained set of professional skills that there is a time and a place for. I believed, and I think Michelle believed, that this was a good time to do that. That hasn't happened. We're going to let that go for now. But one of the issues that's already beginning to come up is who's included, and mm-hmm. is everybody being represented? So we already see a problem arising from that. So it's going to be incumbent.
Well, from what I've heard, the conversation is happening basically between Tina Saldana and Jan Halley. And I mean, if y'all are telling me that there are other people who want to be a part of that conversation, then I think it you know, be constructive to just go ahead and say who that is or who it is that feels excluded somehow from the conversation, because
is one of the issues you want to avoid, which is why you get a professional mediator. But Tina's here. Tina is not aware of a next conversation with Jan. So they had a conversation on Friday?
I'm happy to update you. We had a good conversation on Friday. What happened is that five of us, representing about 70 of the neighbors, decided we would make an offer to meet.
Can you speak to the microphone, please?
I need you to ask.
Sorry.
So we decided that we had waited to kind of see what was happening with mediation, and we decided that we would go ahead and make an offer. I sent that offer, you guys were copied on that, to meet, and we represented the about 70 or so, but there were five of us that offered to meet. Four of us met with Jan, and she had not the managers there, but two other, somebody that worked with her, two other people that have worked with her there. And we had a good conversation about the common ground that we see there for the store. And kind of it came to the fact that we also agreed that she wants an outside event venue, something we're not really supportive. And some of our things were that we would agree to contingencies or whatever based on her dropping the rezoning. And at this point, she left saying she was going to continue with the rezoning, and that's the last I've heard from her.
Okay, well, so how does that add up to there not being a need for further negotiation?
Oh, no,
I didn't say that.
No, I said...
Okay, but that is what y'all are saying.
I'm saying she's
not... No, we're not.
Okay, so there is a need for... Okay, so there is a need for some further negotiation, yes or no?
Well, if she's... You know, so yes and no. We're not aware of any other meetings that she's
set up.
She hasn't set up any meetings with us.
Okay, well, there don't necessarily need to be meetings set up in order for the possibility of future meetings to happen. Is that, I mean, would you agree?
Well, we just have to be notified or asked or...
Okay, well, she emailed this morning, so...
Shortly.
Okay.
But, yeah, as a...
And in terms of, so, you know, just to be clear, I mean, I understand all this discussion about the potential that mediation has. Is that something that you're open to?
We're open to...
Because I heard a voicemail message that you left for town staff asking the town to no longer involve itself in this discussion.
No,
did I misunderstand what you were saying?
Yeah.
What were you saying in that voicemail?
So in that voicemail, what I was saying is at that point, we had made the offer to Jan to meet.
Uh-huh.
And so then I was trying to negotiate a time with Jan, and town staff stepped in and included the managers at that point. And mm-hmm. basically then I didn't know where the negotiations were for setting up a time.
Well, I did not quite understand the point of that voicemail as far as you were saying what I heard on the voicemail was that you were saying that you didn't think that town staff had any role to play in this.
In our invitation to sit down and talk with Jan at that point, it's very difficult to get people together. So so I was trying to work directly with Jan as the property owner and say, when's the time that you could meet? And then you tell me who can meet with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what ended up happening is several more days of nobody knows what's going on.
Okay. But it seems to me that the town of Carrboro is an important stakeholder in this discussion.
The town of Carrboro could have actually emailed us at any time and invited us to meet. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. But it seems like that was kind of discouraged by an email by a voicemail from you saying that you didn't want the town of Carrboro to be involved and why were we butting in?
That was a mistake. That was perhaps the you weren't aware of the fact that Ms. McGuire had actually stepped in the middle of us trying to set up our meetings. We're happy to have. We would have actually thought long time ago. We've been looking at these conditional uses for a year now, or going on.
And me so, too.
Yeah, and so we would have been happy to have received any type of communication saying, is there a small group of you guys that want to meet?
Okay, that's really not the impression that your voicemail left.
Well, I'm trying to clarify it now.
Okay.
So,
Thank you for clarifying.
You know, we were just not aware that today of any additional meetings that have been set up.
I don't know if there's any suggestion in Jan's email that any additional meetings had been set up.
Oh, okay.
No, and there wasn't.
It said that she, as the applicant, was requesting more time before we had a public hearing so that she could have some additional meetings.
To negotiate. Okay, I don't know what that means. We'll just have to ask her.
Right. Okay. So we're open to talking with her, but one of our conditions was that, you know, we step back from the rezoning and talk about what she can do then.
Okay, so when you say one of your conditions is taking off the table the rezoning, can you clarify what you mean by that?
We're opposed to the rezoning.
Okay, I understand that.
I think that this.
But I mean, when you say it's a condition, makes it sound like you're not willing to negotiate unless she takes her application off the table.
I think
Well, hold on. Go ahead, Ms. Saldana.
I'm not speaking as an individual. I'm speaking, as sitting down with a group of people.
Okay.
And talking to them about, hey, you know, maybe we really are talking about having the same type of business here, that and we're just not listening to each other.
Right.
And so that is, you know, but in which case we don't want we don't want the property rezoned because we think that the grandfathered clause is actually what gives us our protection.
I'm clear about that.
Okay. So I guess I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, I mean, are you saying that you're willing to have some negotiations while a rezoning application is pending, or are you saying that you're not willing to have any negotiations while an application is pending?
So I, have to defer to. We would be happy to talk with her. She basically decided she was going to continue on the conditional zoning track as of Friday. That's what she had told us.
So then you said that you wouldn't talk to her anymore?
No, we never said we wouldn't talk to her. We just said, thanks for meeting and sharing your... I mean, that's where it ended.
Okay.
So...
Come on up to the podium, though, if you would, so everyone can have a record of it, because I think it's important for us to all have a record of what the conversations are here.
I'm Devin Clark. I'm just part of a group who sort of represents, let the other neighbors know what's happening if we can find out what's happening ourselves. We, as we said, we are opposed to the rezoning of it.
Okay.
We would like to have worked out some conditions in the current current zoning that would have allowed them to make some profit or whatever and keep the property as it is.
Okay.
As it is zoned now. And this is what we met on Friday for.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the discussion. And we left it at that. She copied what Tina had on the agenda, and we left. And as soon as we left, I think they went upstairs to renegotiate on their petition.
With the staff.
So we've had no other communications about it.
Has there been some negotiation between Johnny's and the staff? I'm not aware of anything along those lines.
They're redoing their petition for rezoning.
Okay, all right. Thank you for clarifying.
We discussed with her that we wanted to keep the same zone, and try to work out some conditions on it. Now, I don't know that you can work out conditions on it. The attorney can probably tell us more about it.
Well,
in the current zone and allow them to do what, you know, some of the things that they want to do to make a profit. This is where we are, and we've heard nothing about ongoing negotiations.
Willing
to do it, but.
But I mean, you're open to some further discussion, because I think that's all that Jan is suggesting that she wants to have.
Well, she hasn't let us know anything. Nobody's let us know.
I only heard from her this morning.
Can I follow up with that?
Yes, sir.
So, Tina, I just wanted to clarify whether you all are aware that the rezoning they're applying for is a conditional rezoning, which means that the Board of Aldermen would, in fact, place legally binding conditions on the use of the property. And typically how we do that, or the reason we do that is largely to protect the concerns that are expressed by neighbors.
Right.
And so I guess I just want to make sure that was clear, that their rezoning does not prevent you from having legally binding restrictions on the property. Right. It, in fact, allows them in a different form that gives the flexibility that some of the things that perhaps you're talking with Jan about that are, like as you say, are common ground, could then be permitted under the zoning while restricting it from things that might be dissatisfactory to the neighbors.
No, we understand that. I mean, and I think one of our biggest concerns is that, one of the things that she wants is an outdoor event venue. And what we saw with the past was that this was really detrimental to the neighborhood. And when you look at the police reports and the time that those noise reports came in, all of them happened before 8 o'clock. So placing hours of restriction at 8 o'clock or 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock is like, you know, fixing somebody's got a right broken leg and they fix the left, you know, put a Band-Aid on the left one and say, you know, let's see you walk. It's not addressing the issue, really. I don't know how, you know, it's like all the noise reports, the 27 noise and parking reports that are, and I may be including all of the reports, so I think if I'm just looking at noise and parking, they're all way around 6 o'clock in the evening, so you can't ask them to close the store at 6 o'clock.
I'm not trying to get into a discussion of what's the
condition. You can't ask that.
Well, we can ask. But
right. So my point is yes. We do understand very clearly that you can place these on the property, and though perhaps some of them would help address some issues, like no alcohol on the property, would help address some issues, you know, the reality of the problems in the past are kind of obvious. So that's why we were continuing to oppose the conditional zoning rezoning.
Nevertheless, that once the zone is changed, of course, it's changed, and it's always easy. Once it's changed, it's always easy to come back for somebody else, whether it be the same owner or another owner, to come back and have and try to get this changed to something else.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's rezoned, it's rezoned forever.
When we finished the meeting on Friday, I did step up and talk to the planning director and said, you know, here are some conditions that we were talking about because we would like to see some increased foot traffic and some increased music inside and stuff inside. And she said to me that under 15.126, because this is a grandfathered property, that actually in order to change any use, you have to show less of a burden on those most affected by it, and that this is a very strict criteria, that one person could actually stop this process.
Evidently.
But then I walked away and I thought, okay, but then is it logical that if we call it something different, like a rezoning, that same criteria isn't valid? Like, now we can just call it, we're not changing the use, we're calling it a rezoning. So that same strict criteria isn't logically still have to be imposed We'd like to work with them, Mark. Yeah. We really would.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's an interesting point you raise, although it's one that's really in the control of the state legislature rather than this board. But
right. So that's, you know, we will wait to hear from her or from the town.
Okay. Very good. Thanks very much for
But nevertheless, is it set for January the 29th?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about to be. Or did we already vote? Did we already vote?
Yeah, I brought this up, I think.
After we vote in.
As a question to open a big can of worms.
Is that right?
Good job, Michelle.
That is right.
Madam Clerk, do you have a record of us voting?
I have Alderman Johnson and then Alderman Haven O'Donnell.
Second. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was voted on. All right. So on... So we'll take up this matter January 29th unless perhaps by some means or another it's resolved in some other way before then.
Yeah. So just because of this little conversation we just had, do we feel like, given that we have until January 29th till the public hearing, that a facilitated discussion makes sense between since there's already been one meeting?
Well,
I'm wondering if we want to talk about it.
I guess it's like, you know, it's from my perspective, it's really in the hands of the central stakeholders. I mean, if they're interested in having a facilitated discussion, then great. And I do think that would be, I definitely agree with y'all that would be constructive.
And they all know that's a possibility.
Yes, but we also were talking about whether we were going to allocate funding for a mediation. We didn't call it a facilitated discussion. Staff had already worked with Dispute Settlement Center, so I'm asking that we clarify if we want a facilitated discussion, who's going to do that? Do we need to direct staff to do more work with Dispute Settlement Center? It sounds like Jan would like to have another meeting. It sounds like the three people sitting right there would like to have another meeting. If we feel like a facilitated meeting makes sense, do we need to direct staff to set that in motion with Dispute Settlement Center? Because they can do a facilitated discussion or call it that instead of a mediation. They do facilitation all the time.
I think they would feel the need
to do an assessment.
Whether it was Dispute Settlement Center or IOG, they would feel the need to do an assessment.
Well, I think at this point the real question is what the town of Carrboro is willing to put on the table terms of the money to help make it happen. So I mean, because that's what it really gets down to, is not would it be constructive to have facilitated or discussion
we have some money in the board.
How much would we be willing to pay?
We have money in the board budget. I don't use any travel money. Whatever part of my travel money is, I don't.
I already spend all your travel money. Sorry.
I'd be willing, for board money to like.
Yeah.
I think that this is really important that we do it well. It may end up costing us $5,000. I think...
Not if I'm involved.
Solving.
Well, we know the assessment is $2,000.
No, I know. I hear you.
I would be willing to support some small amount of money to go toward mediation, but I'm the figures I think I saw earlier from the manager were $2,000 for an assessment and then another $8,000 for a mediation. So that's one concern I have, in that it would set some kind of a precedent prior to us having a really thorough discussion about how we go forward, from here on with mediations. And the second thing is too that if we do decide to go forward, as I read the policy, it's non-binding on us. I mean, it might be that we go through this entire process and that what the parties come up with. We can't be legally bound to go with what they end up
coming. We may not be so.
Yeah, so that's another kind of issue that I want to kind of flesh out when we talk about this policy in the spring. In the general spirit of mediation, ADR, I certainly see that this is an instance where that kind of conversation would be helpful. I'm just not sure if we have the mechanism to put it in place in the next month and a half here.
Well, we brought it up in June.
Go ahead, Jackie.
We brought it up in June when we saw that this was coming down. I think the 8,000 is high. I think we were given their highest estimate. The 2,000 is to go do. I think we could get better estimates. I think the way it works is that the parties involved come up with suggestions for the conditions that are on the conditional use permit. rather than having an hour's worth of people come up and speak their strongest heels in the ground, three-minute argument, and then each of us pontificate, and then we come up with a decision that ticks off half the people in the room and half the people in the community and leaves us all exhausted and feeling ineffective. I think having the people who are most affected come up with the conditions for the conditional use permit, that doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but they say this is what we all can live with.
It certainly would be a helpful context for making a decision, yes.
Rather than, because folks think all week about what they're going to say for 3 minutes.
So put a dollar figure out there that you're suggesting that we make available, because this is really, like I say, this is really what it gets down to, is like what kind of resources the town
Carver
wants.
I would just be pulling it out of my ear.
Pull it out of your ear then.
Then I would say up to $4,000.
Okay, that's probably not going to work. Anybody got another dollar figure?
How about up to $1,000?
Well, how are you going to do the assessment?
Well, because it's not. But, let me say this. There's also the question of whether the stakeholders are going to step up to the plate. And this is my point: is that all along about this has been that until we say what we're going to put in, it's hard to get anybody else to say they're going to put anything else in. And part of the reason you heard the figure like $8,000 is because somebody heard the government was going to pick up the tab.
Well, I heard a rumor around the neighborhood of 25,000.
Well, anyway, whatever. But the point being that the government is not just going to pick up the tab. So what on the entire thing? So what are we willing to do? I could support $1,000. That sounds like a reasonable idea.
I was going to say, what about 2,000? I don't think. I don't do work at the Dispute Settlement Center. They're experts. I get it. And I feel like it's clear that a facilitated discussion would be a good idea with my limited assessment skills. So agreed. I think I'd be good with 2,000, including whatever assessment they need to do, getting the people there, whatever it is, and a facilitated conversation.
Okay. Can I ask a crazy question? Yes. So Tina's here. They met on Friday. Could we ask her how it went? I mean, would it have helped to have had a facilitator, a professional facilitator?
What is that staff?
Well, I'm...
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily germane.
I'm not sure how much that changes my opinion, but
it's like people go to Dispute Settlement Center.
Is there
marital help all the time, right? Mediation,
marital aid.
Has anybody who has not spoken up yet got an opinion about a dollar figure that they might be willing to vote for?
I guess I had a bad idea.
We can see what it would do. I mean, it's a figure that we were saying.
Well, it might not. It may well not, because it may well be that nobody else is willing to join us. And I think, you know, frankly, if no one else is willing to join us in putting any resources forward to making this happen, then, you know, so be it. Then our money won't be spent either. So that's fine with me.
Can I make a comment, please?
Yes, ma'am.
I think that one thing that you all are not considering is the amount of cost and staff time that has already been invested in this project.
I agree.
And I can guarantee you is so not done. And so it's going to go forward. I think it is unfair to even expect the neighbors to contribute to the cost of this. We have already been subjected to over a year of time, stress, aggravation, and we have all kicked in to some legal costs on our own as well.
Okay.
So I throw that out there for consideration.
I appreciate the point you're making. Thank you, ma'am.
I was just going to say that, you know, in response to some of the emails, you know, within the last 2 weeks, I support the idea of an assessment because I feel that having an objective view might move our discussion forward. That said, and I responded that way in an email prior to Friday. I'm very interested to know if the folks who are here who attended the meeting on Friday, if subsequent meetings were to happen, are you comfortable with the way those conversations went?
Absolutely no I mean, the meeting was a good meeting.
Okay.
We were coming to terms with, we wanted different things for this property, yeah. But in terms of us all sitting down there, sitting here there, and Devin was there, you know, represented from the residential home was there, it was a good meeting.
Yeah. Okay. So my point is that clearly they can sit down together. It's not as if they can't get in the same room and sit down together. I almost feel that I want to give the stakeholders my vote of confidence to at least work through one more level of that and have a plan B for us to, you know, allocate up to maybe $2,000 to go through an assessment and create a facilitated discussion should the next steps break down. In other words, I think they're on course. I get that feeling from you, and I have that confidence that the conversation is at least forward moving, but I want to have a plan B.
I think it was a pleasant conversation, yes, the assessment I got, very cordial, very pleasant, and there was no movement on either side. And so
I guess part of the reason that I was suggesting that we go ahead and schedule a public hearing for January 29th is because I think that at some point it is incumbent on the Board of Aldermen to give up on mediation and move toward arbitration and simply say that it is our ultimately our responsibility to decide these sorts of issues and that I think it would be ideal for all of the stakeholders to collectively come up with something they could live with, but that I'm not inclined to hear about this dragging on forever and ever,
mm-hmm.
and that,
right.
You know, I'm looking for resolution to it all.
Yeah.
So I hope that both neighbors and Johnny's and perhaps those who are patrons of Johnny's, which is a somewhat different interest group, will encourage the notion of coming to some kind of compromise that everybody, or anyway that most folks, can live with.
Dan.
I'm comfortable with spending something in the $1,000 to $2,000 range, but Dan?
Okay, so I have a suggestion for you all. Some of you will recall, I think it was with the Wilson Park bathroom remodel, that we put it out for bids a few years ago, and we didn't get a single bid that was within the budget, and so we didn't do it, and we put it out for bids again like 6 months or a year later,
mm-hmm.
and finally we did it. But the point is that we put it out for bids, and you get a range of ideas of who's going to do what approach. So my suggestion is that after you all have a work session in which you actually, apart from any particular interest, as Jackie put it, the heat of the moment, figure out what you think some approaches to mediation, facilitated support of discussions, whatever it might be, could be, and then staff can send out an RFP or just publish an RFP that not just dispute settlement, but there are in fact other professionals, not interns or volunteers,
mm-hmm.
professionals
mm-hmm.
in the community
mm-hmm.
who could do this kind
mm-hmm.
of work and might have ideas that we all wouldn't think of. And so that's my suggestion of how to move forward in having a clear approach to how to do this whole mediation facilitation thing and get an idea of what the range of potential costs are in the future.
That's a good idea. We'll Skype you in February when we have that discussion.
It will not be legal for me to participate. I won't be in bed. I will be having my late morning coffee.
Okay.
All right. Does anybody care to make a motion about budgeting anything for mediation or not?
I would move that we budget up to $2,000 for mediation facilitation in the event that the parties involved are unable to come to an agreement.
Okay.
And I'll second that. Yeah.
By
January 29th.
It really needs to be before that in order for them to have time.
So by December 4th?
How about January 2nd?
That's a little tight. Yeah. January 2nd, so they can they'll have a great New Year's Eve party together and work it out.
They can have an outdoor party.
They can have an outdoor party and work it out.
At somebody's house, they can have a New Year's Eve party. All right, anyway.
I seconded it.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Matter passes 6-1.
Mr. Mayor, before you move on, the Trish's point brought to my attention that the resolution, you've set the date, but you have not indicated the advisory boards to whom, to which it would be referred. The resolution lists appearance, commission, transportation, about the typical list, and you normally indicate as part of the motion to which board you're going to refer the rezoning application, and that wasn't done as part of the resolution, so you need to do that so we know where it gets sent.
Transportation.
That's apparently there's an attachment.
Planning, transportation, economic development.
I don't know that we need appearance on the list because there's no proposal to change that.
It's just a list with boxes to check, and you just use it. It does not suggest.
So planning,
ESC,
transportation,
TAB.
That sounds like a good list.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll understand that to be a part of the motion. Did we already vote?
We did.
You did.
A long time ago. Okay.
No, actually.
5 minutes.
Relatively.
Not even.
Okay.
Yeah. Like forever ago.
All right, 6-1. The fun. Matter passed it. We're on to the next thing.
We are.
Holy smokes. I can't believe it. Item 2 on our agenda. Continuation of public hearing on CUP minor modification application for master design plan for 300 East Main Street. Mr. Manager.
Okay, Tina Moon will give. Oh, Marty. Okay, sorry.
You've got 2 seconds. Go. You can go. Just don't have a quorum.
Shall I proceed or?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good evening. We're here to discuss continuation of the public hearing for 300 East Main signage, the master sign plan. And I have basically a timeline, a few bullet points to talk through, and then we do have the images available if you'd like to see them. And so I'll just run through these quickly. The June 26th Board of Aldermen meeting, changes were adopted to the land use ordinance to allow for this application to move forward under what's called a master sign permit. The adopted language is found in 271D. The application was originally presented to the advisory boards on September 6th. Both the Planning Board and Appearance Commission commented on the proposal at the time. And of note, the Planning Board received additional information at their mid-month meeting regarding the blade sign that was discussed when this reached you on September 25th, which is noted in the next bullet point. At the time, the board did discuss, at the time being September 25th, the board did discuss the application and then subsequently referred it to the Appearance Commission for consideration of the blade sign. The Appearance Commission reviewed the sign and comments are included in your package. And just ever so quickly, the blade sign is now proposed to be 25 square feet per side, reduced from what was 42 square feet per side. It's a net overall reduction of 34 square feet. Placement of the blade sign on the building itself was lowered from 26 feet to 24 feet, 2 inches. Yes, ma'am?
I have trouble visualizing that.
Yes.
Do you have a picture of what that will look like on the building?
I do. I have two. I'll start with the one I have open. I'm not sure how well you can read it, so I did a second one. If this is not, let's see. So if you're on Main Street facing the hotel, the sign is here.
And that's the sign at its new size.
That's correct.
Which is still over a story high.
Yes, it is still...
Still over a story high, so you would be able to see it all up and down Main Street. Is that correct?
Well, all up and down Main Street. The location of it on the building, I believe if you were... it's essentially on Pageant Lane on that side of the building. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't see it until some point as you're going down Main Street. It would
but
come
into
view. But
it's over a story high and it's lit. Is that correct?
The letters themselves are lit. The entirety of the sign is not. But the letters are. Yes.
So it's a prominent sign over a story high.
And is there going to be a building on this side eventually? Part of the plan?
This side being, if you're on Main Street, the hotel... as you'll see it under construction, actually faces right out Main Street. So,
I mean, on the west elevation, isn't there...
Oh, I'm sorry, you mean from the interior. The ultimate build-out does have a building right across. There's a vehicular lane here, and then another building in this location. That would be some point years from now, I imagine. Mm-hmm. I don't know their exact schedule, but that's a later phase.
So that would likely cover it, or is the building short?
I believe it's a five-story building.
Mm-hmm. Unless they ask for a change. But.
Yes. Let me see if I can quickly go back. I was just about done anyway, I believe. Let me see if there was anything especially important I didn't get to yet. All other elements of the plan remain the same. The discussion last time was primarily regarding the blade sign. Actually, I realize I'm not in the slideshow mode here. Regarding the proposed monument sign at Boyd Street, the board had indicated last time that you were accepting of that sign in concept, at least, and the attorney weighed in at the time that you could do what, as I've termed it here, de facto approval of the concept. But the attorney did say that's not simply a matter of interpretation of the ordinance. We will need to bring at a future date a text amendment to you that clarifies the permissibility of that sign. Text amendment has not yet been drafted, but our intent is to do that in a very narrow manner so that we don't open a can of worms, so to speak. That was all I had prepared. I believe either Laura or Woody had a few comments for you about the size and location of the sign, the blade sign specifically.
I can wait till second.
Woody, come on. Woody Farmer is the only person I have signed up. Is there anyone else who came here to speak on this item? Okay. Mr. Farmer?
Do I need to be sworn or anything?
Thank you. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do. This sign is a tremendous change from where we started this process approximately a year ago, I would say, where we had two large lettered signs on the top of the building, which many of you objected to being possibly known as the town of Hampton Inn and Suites. This sign will, since it runs parallel to Main Street, is really for people right in front of the hotel on Pageant Lane. I'm not even sure how far down Main Street you'll be able to see it because it's turned sideways. When the next five-story building goes up, you won't see it at all, except there. The reason we raised it up a little bit in the air, lower than before, we have lowered the length of the sign and the height that it started from, was to make sure it differentiated from the retail so that people didn't walk in this retail door thinking they're going into the hotel. The idea is you see the sign here, but the hotel entrance is down here. It's a small sign in terms of, I don't think the lettering is much bigger than this on the capital size and down to that on the other side size, and only the letters themselves are backlit. We've even given consideration to not lighting it, not putting a sign on the back side. We haven't. This application is for both sides. We're not even sure we'll do that because we just want people to see it and know there's a hotel there. This came out of comments from the Appearance Commission and how to Planning and Parents Joint Commission meeting. How do people even know there's a hotel there? So this was our way of doing that without putting anything down at the road level. That was submitted after that hearing, so you all correctly sent it back to that group to make sure they heard it again. They discussed the size and location, and particularly the height of it in relation to the height of this structure, and had absolutely no problem with it. In fact, strongly recommended it. If you had in the former two-story limit in town, for a two-story structure, obviously that would be high. But for a five-story structure, that's pretty low on the list. You're going to notice the structure a whole lot more than the size. So, any questions?
Okay. Thanks.
Mark, can I ask something?
Lydia, and then you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I was in contact with Tom Wilberger. He's the chair of our appearance commission, because I couldn't attend this meeting, which was held a couple weeks ago. And I asked him about some discussion that went on around this, because what we received in our packet basically just says they voted in favor of it. But he did make, from memory, some points. Overall, the appearance commission meeting, the attendees thought the sign was a nice example of good urban signage. It was preferred over anything mounted horizontally on the building face. The proposed location was good. We think will help to soften the size. While it may seem big at first, it will be sitting off the ground. One story seemed in scale with the mass of the building. We agreed that the first version they submitted was too large. Visually, the retail signage over the ground for shops will also be what we thought the pedestrian public would mostly see going by the building. We liked the fact that only the letters would be illuminated rather than the whole sign or some sort of spotlight system, a lot of what Woody said. And I think, I know myself personally, I'm happy with the way that the developer has listened to what we had to say and what the appearance commission had to say, and I think they came back with a sign, and particularly in that location on Pageant, I don't have any problem with it.
So I was not here on the 25th, and from the minutes, I don't see any concerns that were raised about the sign plan other than to get the appearance commission input on the blade sign. So I'm just wanting to get caught up if there were concerns that are still out there that we need to talk about tonight.
The blade sign was the only...
It kind of came at the last... We got it that day. I think that was...
Okay. That was the main issue.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, he's right. It did start out on the top, and it was a lot bigger. The blade sign, if it's facing out towards the road, the way it is there, like facing face out instead of facing side out, mm-hmm. One of my concerns is that if we approved it and it was facing side out, so that if you were down at the station, that would be what you would be seeing, mm-hmm. Or if mm-hmm. you were, you know, coming from Greenbridge, that would be what you would be seeing. Mm-hmm. My concern wasn't so much that one sign, is that this is the first of these larger scale buildings that are going to be coming into Carrboro, and if every one of them wanted a sticking out this way sign instead of this way sign, then pretty soon when you look down Main Street, all you would see would be kind of tin soldiers of sticking out signs, and that's not really how we want downtown Carrboro to look. So if the blade sign is going sideways and not sticking out towards the street, if it is flush with the building, you following me? Am I saying this right? If it's flush with the building, then I think that's acceptable. If it is not flush with the building, then that's setting a precedent for what we don't want to see 10 years down the line. It'll be kind of pollution. But as it is now, if it is flush with the building, believe it or not, I could support it.
So are you satisfied that it is flush with the building from what we've heard tonight?
Will it be flush with the building? That's what I'm asking.
Let me address that.
It's not going to be like this. It's going to be like,
it's going to be parallel to the road, correct?
This is the building and this is
parallel
the sign,
to Main Street.
Right? Not this is the building and this is the sign.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Promise?
Right. We'll stick out parallel with Main Street, about 28 inches.
Wait a minute.
Can I get something three-dimensional that was
pretty? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the building.
Okay. The hotel is a recycling bin. Go ahead.
This is Main Street. This is Main Street. This is Pageant Lane.
Okay.
Now, this is not the scale. That is what is proposed. So
the sign will run parallel to Main Street.
Right.
Parallel to Main Street. So if you're on Main Street, it's not out here on Main Street. So
right.
If you're up, it's on Pageant.
When you're on Main Street, you need to be
right,
right. And when you're on Main Street, you primarily see it when you're like across the street,
right,
facing toward the building,
right.
Not
but
a block
not,
away, looking down Main
right.
Street.
It's not proposed to be like this,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and that's what
okay.
You know. I can come and make you move it if that's not true, right?
Right. It's on Pageant, and this
which
sign,
I will.
This space of the sign will be facing Main Street. This back sure. Sign, which is really
okay.
The ordinance, it's not
visible
from the right
of way.
Okay.
But it's
not, if I'm
the
building, it's not flush
with
the building.
It's
like that.
Okay.
Wait a minute,
you just totally changed
what
you were saying.
Right.
No.
If we don't build it as represented, we'll move it.
But I want to make sure Jackie understands.
Show me where Main Street is on that top. Or the
Main
top.
Street's right there.
This
that's
Main.
Me.
So if you're standing on the sidewalk on Main Street, you're looking at parallel with the building in Main Street, the face of this sign.
And if
you look at this viewpoint.
But if I'm standing down at like Weaver Street Market or something and looking up Main Street or up Weaver in Maine, I'm probably not going to. I basically won't be. Okay, but my point being, because it doesn't stick out over Main Street's right of way, I won't be able to see it basically at all.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if I stand at Weaver Street and I see it, I can come get you.
You'll see the edge of it.
And you think you've seen me mad, but you haven't seen me mad.
You'll see the edge.
You see the edge. You see Marty's.
But you have to
see
him.
I'll see the edge. Definitely.
Okay.
Okay, you can do it.
Okay. I'll take that
second.
Motion.
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
Surprise.
Oh my goodness. All right. I expect Johnny to be absolutely a simple one in January. report from the OWASA subcommittee. Mr. Manager, do you have anything to introduce? No.
I'm not quite sure who's going to make the presentation, Randy or Olivia.
We started meeting in June, and we met through the summer, July, August, and on October 9th, we put together a summary, which we'd like you to take a look at. We've made some recommendations about how we see we can move forward. It was a really good learning experience to go through from start to finish, not only with the questions that the board had, but as we peeled back the information and generated more questions. We got substantive information. Tom Franson from Department of which department was he for? Department of Water Quality
mm-hmm.
came and met with us. We had our reps from OWASA come and meet with us and work with us. So all in all, I think it was a very productive, and it really helped us to, to learn about the issues and make some suggestions for how we can view the issues and move forward.
Yeah, so in that spirit, after we had several meetings, we kind of identified three basic big areas that we wanted to
kind of have ongoing discussion about. And this is all outlined in this memo to you all, but for the purposes of the public, we're just us kind of doing a recap here. The first one was this pursuit of a level one allocation, and we really wanted to get at that, you know, why Owosso felt like they had to do that right now and what kind of implications that might have for us in the future. And so we had a really detailed, interesting conversation about that, which I'll recap. Secondly, we all have ongoing concerns still with the current drop protocol, and we came up with no, you know, kind of resolution or recommendation about that other than to recognize we all still have ongoing concerns with the current drop and how it may implicate Wasamba, and I know Sammy might speak to that. And then thirdly, an overlay of this was talking with Owosso, and our reps were also at a few of the meetings too, and I see Dana out there right today. But, you know, talking to Owosso and our reps about conveying our desire to for them to encourage more innovative ways and continued ways to conserve. But I'll speak to this specifically, the pursuit of a level one allocation.
Could I just ask one clarifying question? Actually, it's just for as you lay this out, if there are points that we might take action on or discuss that are different from something we've done in the past, mm-hmm. in other words, resolutions we've already made on the drop policy or on the level one allocation, I'd like to specifically hear that, or if you're just in some cases reaffirming what we've discussed.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, I know for drop, we have a we passed a resolution a few months ago, and mm-hmm. and I don't know that we didn't have any recommendation to deviate from that or change from that, or we didn't even really get into that much. But I know specifically as for level one, we had a pretty lengthy discussion about that and wanted to understand why Owosso felt it was necessary to move forward with that right now. And a lot of this is laid out here, but, you know, as you all know, right now we are level two. And, you know, level two is meaning that we have an allocation. Level one means you have an allocation, you have intent to withdraw within 5 years from Jordan Lake. Now, Owosso is of the understanding that they interpret this to be intend to draw water within 5 years, not begin to draw water within 5 years. And so the essence of that is that by pursuing level one, they want to have the level one as a backup rather than as a we're going to affirmatively draw water within 5 years. They think it would be enough to say we intend to draw within 5 years, and they have said
that
they want
within
to.
Within 5 years, we will have the intent.
Within 5 years, we intend, meaning if we had a severe drought and had to go to it maybe for emergency purpose, mm-hmm. but not draw continuously from Jordan Lake.
Uh-huh.
Now, the next thing was they talked to us about how the rounds are made. You know, like they've had three different rounds of allocations. The fourth round is coming up right now. It's like a two-year process. And so right now where they are in the process of trying to get in the hopper for this round of allocations, they need to submit applications by February of next year, final applications by May, and decisions are made late September. But their concern is that where in years past we had an arrangement with Cary or Durham that in times of emergency we could draw from their allocation, that those entities have made it clear with us that they do not want us to draw from their allocation anymore. And so it's Owosso's position that we need to have our own allocation there in case we need to draw within the next 5 years. Now, the last point I'll make about this, and then the other two can chime in if I've missed any major points. You know, we talked about how the administrative rules around how you get these levels, level two and level one, don't seem to reward a group like us that has our own water system and that only wants to use Jordan Lake in case of emergency. Instead, kind of making us have to, at least visually to us, have to commit to drawing within 5 years. And so we suggested to the folks at the Owosso that if they were rejected in their application, to possibly approach and try to look for a rule change of some sort that would allow for a something between a level 2 and a level 1, you know, not intending to withdraw within 5 years, but to still have that availability out there in case of an emergency. So I don't know if that's kind of a I've had OWASA speak for so many months that may not have been as well explained as I would like. But Sammy, if you
can I ask one question about that? Did Franzen reaffirm what he told OWASA back in the spring? Sammy and I were at that meeting, that basically to switch from level 2 to level 1 is an administrative decision that he said was very straightforward, quick, and simple. And if so, I guess I'm curious if OWASA has responded to that point in terms of this other argument.
Yeah, I think they're kind of waiting to hear from us before they do simply that administrative, move. But that administrative move then kicks in this next year of filling out the complete application and then deciding whether to then actually
That's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to that if after next February or whatever it is, we're still at level 2 and there's a drought. We don't know if there's going to be a drought in the next 5 years. So to me, to say that we intend to draw water in the next 5 years only for emergency purposes is dishonest or perhaps sophistry. But what Francis said was that when you're level 2 going forward, at any point, if you realize you actually need to draw the water, you can readily switch to level 1. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, he did say that.
Well, yeah. But there is a problem. There's one concept that came out and was kind of lost before that, and that is that what has to happen is a level 1 entity has to be debited for the water. And if we're at level 2 and we request emergency waters to be allocated to us, one of the other entities, Cary or Durham, has to be
That's not right. No. There's a pool of water and there's X number of allocations. Some of them are level 1, some are level 2, but it's different piles
but,
of water.
But a level 1, you have to have a level 1 entity has to be debited for the water that's going to be drawn. If we're at level 2, okay, it can't come from our allotment.
I'm talking about when we switch, if we needed to switch to level 1 to make an emergency draw, we wouldn't be level 2 anymore. We'd have the same 5 million gallon allocation, but it would be a level 1 allocation, not a level 2 allocation. It's not Cary's 5 million. It's our same 5 million that we've always had.
The issue isn't that we're going to lose our allocation because we do have it allocated through a level 2. It's
right.
Not even the issue of not having access because it is an administrative decision. It's an application for getting the level 1. It's an administrative decision. What is underlying OWASA's and what is driving them to seek this is they're concerned in this next round of allocation, for the fourth round of Jordan Lake allocation. They want to have the level 1 allocation so that they have a stronger claim to the water. What I've always been asking in this process is how is it does the body that makes that decision weigh so significantly the fact that they've achieved an administrative decision, or do they weigh the fact that OWASA, compared to the other people who claim Jordan Lake, has less of a claim by the fact that it's seeking use of Jordan Lake solely for emergency purposes, whereas Cary and Durham and all these other places are doing it for real reasons, because that's their water supply. So the question then becomes, if OWASA has such a weak claim and they're just through this administrative process trying to prop up that claim, why not pursue a rule change which takes more time but would actually achieve the ultimate goal of what their purpose is, to secure backup emergency water through Jordan Lake?
Who would make the rule change?
The state or the EMC.
Dan, to your last point, I never heard him say that we could kind of in between the rounds, or if it suddenly became necessary for us to go from 2 to 1. I don't think I heard him say we could do it outside of this time frame.
Oh, well, he said that very clearly at the OWASA board meeting back in the spring, that it, all you had to do was write a letter to the whoever the head of DWQ is, and it's basically it's just a procedural thing. It's not even like there's a decision involved.
I know that. I understand that part, but I mean, I think that even that letter, my understanding is that that has to happen sometime in the next couple months.
No. He said you do that, you know, if you're at level 2 and you get to the point where you realize you actually need to draw the water, you send the letter, and it's very quick till you can actually begin your draw.
Well, it might be helpful to you if our committee could follow up on that question, because I think that really is critical to understanding this issue. Mm-hmm. And
Dana was there at that meeting. She might
there's a lot
speak
of,
to that as well.
Will you raise your hand, Dana?
Yeah.
Okay. I periodically feel like come on up while I'm talking. And I periodically feel like I hear this hyperbole about how, you know, oh, we're going to run out of water and you know, we won't be able to access Jordan Lake even though we have a supposed allocation there, and that, you know, the state will throw up all this red tape, and that, you know, basically that the governor of North Carolina is going to force the University of North Carolina to shut down in the event of a drought. And I guess all of that just doesn't sound remotely plausible to me. I mean, I believe that we have a very responsive state government, and that, you know, an emergency will deal with an emergency. But go ahead, Dana. What did you feel you heard?
Well, just to speak to the level 1 issue, there are two other elements to that, and one is that there is an expenditure involved, mm-hmm. that OWASA would pay about a $250,000 fee to convert to level 1, and also that the staff would have the board of directors vote to do that. And right now that is scheduled to occur on December 13th at the board of directors meeting. So part of the reason that the board of directors postponed that vote was to get a sense of you all and your reaction to that.
And that's reimbursable, to $250,000. Mm-hmm. So even if we decide to not amend Wasamba, they can get their money back. Right. To that question of I think there's some confusion because there is a deadline, but that's my understanding, that's for the round 4, but that's not for the thing that Dan's talking about, the administrative process. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's for the round 4 allocation, which is just keeping the amount, the five million gallons a day.
Dana, is it your understanding with the administrative process that it is just a matter of pro forma of writing a letter? To move from level 2 to level 1.
Mm-hmm. With the exception of the two things that I mentioned, there is a cost.
Right.
And
But so does the cost have to be paid at that time, or?
It's an upfront cost, so, yeah. Initial.
Well, I know part of what we talked about was that upfront cost of $250, and that it could be reimbursed if after exploring for the next year and a half or whatever, OWASA decides not to become level 1, then that's reimbursed, right?
Right.
And then part of the other discussion we had at length with OWASA folks was what other kind of cost commitment is there in terms of if we had to, you know, get money on an emergency basis through Cary or Durham, what kind of cost would we be expected to contribute toward Cary or Durham or whoever would be our emergency water source in the future? And they really couldn't be forthright about what those costs would be, which is part of why we expressed our concern with that. But part of, I guess, their explanation was that they still needed to explore that while they had this administrative permit out there after they had applied for it.
So the staff is working with those entities on a contract to be able to supply the water, and I think that would be part of that contract. And it's a slow process, but they're working on it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor, could I just ask a clarifying question? I don't understand the relationship between this level 1, level 2 issue and whether you apply for it or you don't, and Wasa's request that we amend Wasamba. Is there a relationship between the two?
There is a relationship there. Could somebody recap what that relationship is? Because I'm not clear on it either.
Well, ultimately, in regard to our decision making, there really isn't. Like, Wasa is planning to go for the level one allocation irrespective.
But there's something in Wasamba that
yeah, it's because Wasamba stipulates. It's kind of paradoxical because Wasamba stipulates emergency use only of Jordan Lake, and they think, even though they only want emergency use, that if it says emergency use, they won't get the level one. Is that right, Dana? Am I saying as you understand?
Wasamba has two mechanisms for water transfer. There is a non-emergency. There are emergency transfers, and there are non-emergency transfers.
Right, but there's that's one specific clause that refers to Jordan Lake that says Jordan Lake would be used for emergency purposes.
Under the Wasamba, Wasa doesn't require the board's permission to withdraw or to have water transferred from Jordan Lake for emergency purposes. But emergency purposes is defined pretty narrowly. The system fails, somebody blows it up. You know, it's not designed. The non-emergency would include sort of the gradual drought situation. And it's that kind of withdrawal under the Wasamba as it presently exists that requires the Board of Aldermen's approval, which is the reason they came. I mean, Wasa has repeatedly asked the board to change that, to amend that, so that it does not require the Board of Aldermen's approval, which you have rejected. And I'm not clear what the relationship is between the discussion about level one and level two and their request to the Carver Board of Aldermen to amend Wasamba so that your approval is not required, so they can unilaterally decide whether to obtain water for non-emergency purposes. I don't understand the relationship between the two.
Yeah, I think our discussion of whether Wasamba need to be amended kind of related to the drop, because the drop kicks in at a very high level. The idea of going to Jordan Lake kicks in at a fairly high level, which is clearly not emergency.
What do you mean when you say the drop and a high level?
Remember the drop that we saw they presented to us that showed us at what level of capacity they would go to that level one, which they could go to Jordan Lake and use Jordan Lake water. And at some points,
in other words, that point where our what we have in our two lakes is so low.
It used to be like 30% or something like that. But remember this.
The drop is a protocol. The drop assumes that the agreement would be amended. In other words, the drop is irrelevant unless you agree to amend the Wasamba so that it does not require your permission.
Right.
The drop is kind of a sweetener, if you will, to say if you will agree to amend Wasamba, then we also will adopt this protocol which sets forth the circumstances and terms under which we would exercise our unilateral authority to withdraw water under non-emergency circumstances.
Right.
But the drop, of course, is, if you read the drop, I mean, Wasa could change it at any time, but that's what the drop is. It's basically saying it's sort of a, I use the term sweetener, it's an incentive to say, if Board of Aldermen, if you will agree to amend Wasamba the way we have requested, we will adopt this protocol, which will give you some sense of security about how we're going to use the authority which you would then give us.
But I think that the ultimate point there is that for changing Wasamba, we're giving up our ability to say when we will access Jordan Lake. And
yes.
So signing off on the drop is us signaling that we are willing to do that. And so that's why I've always said, why do you want to talk about the drop? Why are we not talking about Wasamba? But it's good to talk about the drop. I mean, they're trying to convey something there. But ultimately, do we want to have a say in when we access Jordan Lake? I read about when we were in drought, how much Carbro was significant in making sure that conservation and efficiency measures happened, and so we would potentially be giving up that leverage by by doing it in at a time when there is no emergency. So that's part of the issue. As for why it is that Owosso wants to change Wasamba so badly and access Jordan Lake, you know, one of the claims is that, you know, with climate change, there's less and less predictability with droughts, and that they would like to access Jordan Lake in non-emergency times to assure that they reduce the risk on the water supply. And so that's why this line is bumped up so far. But what that will do is it will put us in a situation where the pressure for folks to implement conservation efficiency will be taken off of us, because we'll be accessing Jordan Lake early on. And the effect of using less water as a population will be reduced. And so that's something to weigh and consider also when we're thinking about access to Jordan Lake on non-emergency purposes. You know, we're foregoing an opportunity to be more efficient and conservative with our use of water.
And if I could add to that, it's a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, Owosso is always ready to point out that the last two droughts, the communities responded by increasing conservation, and that those increases have persisted after the drought. So, you know, those mechanisms have led to ongoing savings, not just of water, but also of the energy that heats the water and treats it and all those good things. So.
So you're getting to the point of which, you know, we were looking at action areas forward. And I don't know, Kathy, if you could put up the graphic just so folks could see that from our conversation, we were looking at a significant effort with conservation to be able to make the point to Owosso that we really want to work on this. So we're looking at expanded programs, expanding infrastructure on conservation. For Carbo to model the way forward with a more integrated infrastructure program, the town of Carbo with Owosso potentially developing a conservation task force, and maybe that includes Chapel Hill and other key players. Continuing to look at this question of the drop and, of course, how it informs the Wasamba. And third, no matter what happens, I think it's really wise for us to move forward in looking at North Carolina rules so that other municipalities can, work towards greater conservation. And it wouldn't just be, you know, little Carbo doing something that is, you know, is different. Creating flexibility and that change in the ruling over time. And not only that, discussing with our legislators and our other local partners the possibility of a rule change and getting them to support our efforts in that. So these are the kinds of things that we, as we looked at this information, we saw three, strategic areas to continue to move forward.
Yeah, and I guess my biggest takeaway from all of these meetings was I want to make sure that we have access to money to water in times of emergency, and currently we have that through the arrangements we have with our neighbors, with our level two allocation, whereby they are debited. And if it secures us for emergency purposes to apply for, investigate, and perhaps move to a level one with a $250,000 outlay and some type of partnership arrangement on an emergency basis with neighbors, I don't see that as a bad thing. What I don't want it to do is signal that we're necessarily in agreement of the proposed drop and going to Jordan Lake on a non-emergency basis. Mm-hmm. On a regular basis, but that's kind of really what perked me up was does it make sense to pursue the level one allocation? And in my view, it doesn't. It makes sense to at least be in support of them filing the administrative fee or whatever and investigate it for several months, and then once the full cost is fleshed out, if they decide to move forward or not, then we can talk about it some more. I mean, really, kind of what we talk about really doesn't matter as much until we get to the Wasamba. But
right.
I think,
that's right.
I don't know, it's just helpful for us to all kind of be in the loop as far as this level two, level one discussion.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, to try and put all this into a little bit broader context, I guess my reservation is really this, that sometimes your growth plans become a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, and that I feel like I'm being pushed toward a particular conclusion about the overall size of the Chapel Hill Carrboro community, the overall pace of growth, which says, well, because it's possible that Chapel Hill and Carrboro will grow at the maximum projected rate that OWASA has estimated, and because we may do the worst possible job of implementing conservation and efficiency procedures and policies in the future, that there is this time out there in 2027 where one little corner of the chart says that in an extreme drought situation we might run out of water, that we should give ourselves access to Jordan Lake, that we should go to this lake that drains, you know, every parking lot in Greensboro and God knows how many sewer systems and septic systems and Mebane and Eflin and every bloody place from here to the
water is finished in Cary, so we don't want people to have the wrong idea. It's not water coming from Jordan, it's water really coming from Cary.
Well, but where do you think Cary gets their water? It comes out of Jordan Lake.
Right, but it's it goes through the treatment process in Cary. Cary's drinking it.
Absolutely, okay? Absolutely.
It's not coming from...
Absolutely, okay. But my point is really that where does our current drinking water come from, and what are the land uses upstream of that? And the answer is a bunch of woods and farms in Orange County, for the most part. There's a tiny amount of Alamance County and a tiny amount of Chatham County that drain in those directions, but that our county commissioners have control over those land uses, and they have been extremely tight in preventing various activities from happening upstream of University Lake and upstream of the Cane Creek Reservoir in order to ensure that we have a high quality of drinking water for us to drink in our community. They have. You know, gone to the mat for us in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, those of us who are OWASA customers, to protect the quality of our water, which I greatly appreciate.
And
all these other municipalities and counties that are in the watershed above Jordan Lake have done pretty much the opposite thing. They've done as little as they possibly could to protect the quality of water in Jordan Lake because they don't give a damn about what kind of water those of us down at this end of the watershed are drinking. And, you know, I hear what OWASA is saying, that, yes, okay, well, we want access to Jordan Lake only for an emergency. But my question is, what constitutes an emergency? And to what extent does it become a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy to say, well, yeah, you know, we could make certain planning decisions and certain conservation and efficiency decisions that would ensure that we won't ever have to use Jordan Lake, or we could take a gamble on growing in a way and having an approach to water usage that says, we'll run the risk because, hey, we can always drink this sludge that we're able to pump out of Jordan Lake. And, you know, my feeling is that if what OWASA's own OWASA's own internal projections show is that there is a very low risk that under the highest growth scenario, under the lowest conservation and lowest efficiency scenario, that we might need some of Jordan Lake. That is not the description of a situation where we need to go after having a permanent full-time access to Jordan Lake, and that... Once you kind of open up the Pandora's box of saying, well, we have access to it if but only if we need it. You know, it's like saying, well, your employer is going to give you an extra $1,000 a month, but only if you need it. Well, guess what? It's going to turn out you need it, you know? Or you may comment on that if you like, and then
and
have
I think
a seat.
Those are valid concerns, and with a level one access and with Samba, of course, you know, you would still be making the decision about whether to go there. But the thing about level one, given the circumstances right now, are that Cary and Durham have said that they won't guarantee access in emergency. So what we're looking at right now is guaranteed emergency access. And so I guess that's what we're trying to get a message back about.
But Dana, is it not the case that we can, within a short time, convert our level two to level one and have that guaranteed access if that proved necessary in the future? Because that's what I heard Franzen say to you all back in the spring.
I think, I was
Jack,
just going to respond to...
Well, Jack has been waiting. We'll come back to you.
Go ahead,
Jack.
Just to back up what Mark said, this community for 30 years, for over 30 years, when I first moved here in 76, the Cane Creek Reservoir fight was going on. And a lot of people sacrificed their way of life, their land, for Cane Creek Reservoir. And then came the Watershed Protection Ordinance for University Lake. That shaped the zoning in this county. Owassa is the largest landowner in Orange County. Is that right, Mark? More than the university. More than the university. That not only means that we pay for that land as Owassa customers, it means we, in essence, pay for that land as taxpayers because that land's all off the tax map. The political fights that have gone on in this community for over 30 years have mainly been about the water. And so what Mark is saying, to open this Pandora's box about it's an emergency, well, that could end up being, okay, we're going to build this outrageous development that's really not sustainable, because in the back of your mind, you know, that if there is an
emergency.
You know, if it causes an emergency, we're backed up for an emergency. And I don't want to have spent all of my political life, indeed, a lot of my adult life, in a community that's made huge sacrifices to have the best water in the state of North Carolina in order to, like, open this crack. That we have the zoning the way we have the zoning throughout this area in order to protect the watershed. You're not even allowed to walk around University Lake. You know, we don't even use it as very much of a recreational area because we want to keep it pure. You're not even allowed to walk in Owassa's woods, you know, and yet we're going to be asked to, like, to tap into an allocation where we would hope that it would be coming from the woods. It opens a crack. I really mean what I'm saying, Dan. It opens
a
crack.
I understand why you're speaking to me.
It opens a crack that can undo what people have been working on for generations and generations, and I'm not willing to go along with it.
Jackie, did you have something to say to me?
That's okay.
Okay.
Sammy and then Dan.
Well, to Dan's point, I appreciate what you were saying, Jackie. Thanks. To Dan's question, you know, the other concern that Owassa has is it's not just the administrative quick change to get the level one, but the question of the infrastructure that would be required if Cary and Durham and the pipes and all that has to be in place. And so, you know, that's a cost, and it takes time, apparently. But one of the concerns I had was OWASA apparently, you know, they're seeking a level one, but they don't, they haven't done the full research into what those costs actually are. So it's been curious to me to see that they're willing to pursue level one without having a good sense of what the costs would be to have the commitment with Cary and Durham. And that to me seems odd as at like a minimum. And
Dan.
Yeah, I want to follow up on, Mark, what you were saying about the sort of uncertain or potentially shifting definition of emergency. And I share that concern. And part of it is I've had a lot of trouble with some of the things coming out of OWASA over the last couple of years in these discussions. And I mean, I feel uncomfortable talking about this the same way Joe Biden had trouble talking about the misleading statements of Paul Ryan, if you recall that debate. But, you know, it's from something as simple as when we, this board unanimously voted against the level one allocation a year and a half ago, and there was a memo from OWASA saying some members of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen opposed this, which is like dismissing the voice of this body. That's a little thing, not particularly germane. But then this whole idea that we're in some alternate universe where intend to draw in the next 5 years means that if there's an emergency, we'll draw, but we don't know if there'll be, you know, we don't know if there'll be in a drought that means that, but somehow that's an intention. That's just, to me, that kind of stinks. It really does. I just think that's dishonest, and it's manipulative of the process, and it makes me, it raises a concern for me about, you know, where we might go in the future, and it's why it's important for me that we maintain, you know, what little leverage we have, which is through the WASAMBA primarily on this stuff, but I think it's also important that we continue to voice our opposition to the level one allocation at this time, because what I'm hearing from the committee, a subcommittee, and it sounds like you all did some great work in terms of the level of discussion you were able to have on these issues, but in a way, we come out with as many questions as answers. And I think to make this kind of move, we need better answers, and I'm not convinced that there aren't solutions within our own water system. We're hearing about, well, Durham won't guarantee us emergency water well. You know, what, two droughts ago, it was us giving Durham emergency mm-hmm. water. Mm-hmm. And so it goes both ways. And that's always in the past been expressed as a very mutually supportive relationship. And, you know, maybe something's changed. But I also see, you know, I've read the, you know, guest columns in the papers that OWASA staff has published that are all like, you know, kind of inflammatory in terms of the threat of water shortages that we have, you know, that I don't believe we really face. And so I think that this board is in a position to really be clear about, you know, wanting clarity on those issues, but being really steadfast in our commitment to the primacy of conservation and also to the kind of commitments Mark and Jackie are talking about. And it's interesting because Dana will recall when she first expressed interest in the OWASA board, I told her to listen to, I guess it was a 2010 meeting where you two made very similar speeches to what you made tonight, that you guys have been carrying that message forward for the last 20-plus years. And we're really fortunate on this board that we have that historical memory and that we're in a position to keep OWASA and to keep the process connected to our history and to our roots and to our basic values regarding conservation.
Lydia and then me.
I'm certainly not being dismissive of Mark's comments and Jackie's comments. I mean, I remember when we first talked about that, it was so informative to me to get the background on all of this. And I think that I can't imagine, hope I'm not misstating this, our community electing folks to these seats that would go above and beyond in a way that would somehow hurt the current system we have in place in terms of land use planning. But here's my main concern is this. I don't want to sit on this board and have a time of emergency where we don't have a go-to for water. And, if it is indeed a time of emergency. I mean, for all the years up till now, as I understand it, we've had emergency transfer agreements through Cary, and Cary or Durham. I think it's with Cary, but Durham also goes through Cary. But as I understand it, we will no longer have that as an emergency backup option. And so, I mean, that's my main concern is, what if we do, and what if we do before Cane Creek comes on board in 2030 or whenever it is, and what if we do have a situation where we really are desperately low on water, where we're kind of looking at piping it in from the Haw River or something like we did a few years ago. And I know I sound like a Wausau hyperbole, but we don't know what's going to happen in the next 20 years. So I view it as just, it's a way to still have some type of an emergency way to get water if necessary with our own, continuing the way we have with our own water supply.
Well, so let me address that point because just to be clear, we didn't actually pipe water in from the Haw River a number of years ago at the depths of the drought. That was the plan. Mm-hmm. That was going to be one of I think three next steps that could potentially have been taken. So number one, let me just ask the question: what has changed in the past 10 years? That means that is somehow no longer an option, because my recollection is that 8-9 years ago when I was on this board that OWASA was telling us we have three more options. Mm-hmm. Okay. So did those options go away? I'm not saying they're desirable. I'm not saying that I want to pipe water from Jordan Lake, but I'm saying like it keeps being presented to us, frankly, somewhat disingenuously as if those options do not exist in this situation in which we might possibly find ourselves in an extreme drought situation. To my knowledge, none of those have gone away. And to my knowledge, all of those things were things that the state of North Carolina stood absolutely ready. The Division of Water Resources was absolutely ready to basically provide the rubber stamp to approve any of those options should we feel that we needed them back in 2002 or whatever it was, number one. Number two, I guess I kind of see it. I just see the overall situation. I used to live in Vancouver, British Columbia for a while. When I lived there, I had a roommate. His name was Craig. And Craig was constantly talking about how he was going to buy a new car. And he kept telling me that he was going to buy this gigantic sport utility vehicle. Now, he lived in the city of Vancouver, and he worked like 2 miles away in downtown Vancouver. And he took the public transportation system in Vancouver every day to get to his work. And I kept asking him, well, Craig, Why are you planning on getting this gigantic sport utility vehicle? You hardly drive your car at all as it is right now, or whatever. And he would say, well, we live in British Columbia. You never know. Like, maybe I'll have to go to some remote area of British Columbia, or what if I decide to take a cross-country skiing trip and I need it to get into this remote area of British Columbia, or what if there's an incredible snowstorm that strikes Vancouver? And I was like, Craig, we live at sea level. The snowstorms hit British Columbia, but they never hit Vancouver. And when was the last time you went on a cross-country skiing trip? Where are your cross-country skis anyway? And he was constantly like, well, but, and I'm just like, look, why don't you just tell me the truth, Craig? You want to buy a sport utility vehicle so that you'll own a sport utility vehicle.
You know, you're couching it in terms of, I want to be prepared for this extreme emergency. But the truth is, what you want is just to have it so that you can have it. And I kind of feel like I'm getting the same. This is really fundamentally what's at stake here at Owosso, is that they're trying to have this allocation because they want to have this allocation, and that at some level there's this desire for the prophecy to fulfill itself, and to say that we have to meet the 99.9th percentile situation just in case, and that once we've got ourselves the capacity to meet the 99th percentile possibility, that it encourages this board, it encourages our county commissioners, it encourages the Chapel Hill Town Council, it encourages everybody to think in terms of the 99th percentile scenario in terms of our water usage. And I guess I don't buy that. I don't think that's the right attitude. I don't think it's the right approach. You know, it's like, think about it in terms of, like, how did you view it when Duke Power was seeking to build another electrical generation facility at Cliffside? They were saying, well, our projections show that the demand is going to go this way. Well, of course their projections show the demand is going to go this way. They want the demand to go that way. And, I mean, I respect the people who run Owosso. I think it's an incredible organization, and I think they do a fantastic job. But I also believe that the financial model that drives Owosso drives them to think in terms of, how do we sell more water in the future? And I get that impulse, but I think, you know, that's not necessarily that may be what's best in some way for the bean counters at Owosso, but I don't think it's what's best for our community. And I don't think it's what's best for our environment. And I think it's, frankly, it's what's wrong with everything in this country.
And I add to that, 16 or 18 years ago, we spent a summer. And in that summer, I sat through 120 hours of meetings, truly 120 hours of meetings, with the neighbors surrounding the quarry. And the argument for the quarry was, we have to have a backup to King Creek, you know. And so lots and lots of stuff happened to make the quarry possible. What I'm confused about now is, how come in our talk of going to an allocation to Lake Jordan, there's no deadline on that? That if, and I'm not saying I would want this, but I haven't even seen it, that we would get this emergency allocation up until the point where the quarry comes online. And the quarry is supposed to come online, I think, within 10 years. And how come there's nothing?
2025.
2027 or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So like 15 years.
Yeah, something like that.
So, but there's nothing in these plans that says, when the quarry comes online, and that was another case of incredible community turmoil and a lot of money and sacrifice.
That the interests of Chapel Hill and Scarborough residents trump the interests of people who live next to the quarry.
Yes, exactly. And so that's not even being brought up in these discussions. What are they planning on doing with the quarry water? Like selling that to somebody else while we drink out of Jordan?
Well, I know there has been discussion about no longer needing the allocation once the quarry comes online, and I don't know if that means that it would go from level one to back to level two, or whether we would just get rid of it altogether.
Yeah, they did talk to us.
There's nothing in the stuff I'm seeing.
So,
but thank you.
And this has been a really healthy discussion. This is very similar to what we've been talking about since June, and going back and forth and wrangling over these very same things, and concerned about the quality issues and concerned about the conservation. And so I just want to kind of bring it back around, because one of the things that would be useful to us as this subcommittee is to get direction from the board as to whether or not we can continue to meet and work on these kinds of items and work with our reps to fortify their position and to work with, Chapel Hill folks and talk about getting rules changed and talk about developing further conservation efforts and expanding conservation programs, you know, so that we have more local control. Right now, you know, talking as we are right now, we don't have anything really in place other than our frustration with the WASA and sharing it with our reps. But if we start to move in these other directions, we're going to be able to have a deeper impact on the way things are set up and possibly make a significant change. So I'd like the board to at least give us some direction as to next steps.
It sounds like you all are wanting to continue this work.
We'd like that's the sense I had from our last meeting. There are things that we have in place that we would like to continue.
I think our OWASA reps, and particularly Steve, who's recently appointed, I think they kind of appreciated just some of the general discussion and thinking that we have, particularly, I think, around some of the conservation
right.
areas.
Right.
So go for it. Do we need a motion that they go for it?
I want Mark's direction on that.
Well, I suppose it's useful. I mean, I feel like y'all have brought some new ideas to the table that are helpful to me at the very least, in terms of saying, you know, maybe the issue really here is the state law. There's a problem in the state law and recognizing the kind of the distinction between emergency access and routine access. So I hope y'all would continue mm-hmm. on that path. Does somebody want to offer maybe a motion to move forward? But, you know, taking into account kind of the conversation we just
well,
had.
Then I'd offer up that the OWASA subcommittee continue in its work and follow through on the recommendations made to the board, action areas.
A second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously.
So, Mark, there's one more thing, I think, which is, if I understood what Dana was saying, the OWASA board has a December meeting scheduled to discuss the application for Level 1, and that was timed to see if we had any further input in that. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that our board should reaffirm our opposition to seeking the Level 1 allocation at this time. There are just too many questions and uncertainties, and there's too much else, too many other options on the table to make that a necessity at this time, in my view.
If we have that vote, I'll vote against it, just because I'm not against OWASA starting the pursuit of it. Now, it may be that they end up not going for it or whatever, but in my view, it's an administrative decision that they're making and kind of going forward with that. And I just kind of want to make that known before we take the vote.
Okay. Well, I just want to say, Lydia, that I think Mark is totally right on that there's a organizational culture and inevitability that's tied to the whole culture of growth in our society that is so destructive, and to say that they can set on this path and easily step away from it, I think is unfortunately not likely. You know, I wish I could believe that was the case, but I don't. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there a second for Dan's motion?
Second.
All right. It's been moved by Dan and seconded by Jackie. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter passes 5-2.
I just want to make a point there. You know, I think the value of our vote just now is to also convey to OWASA that, you know, Wasamba is still something to be still, mm-hmm. I mean, we're signaling that we are very reluctant to alter mm-hmm. that for all the reasons expressed here tonight. So for them to move forward with Level 1, you know, to do that knowing our position is such. And I wanted to make just one last point, too. You know, with the idea of working to make sure that you're safe in emergency times for the 99% possibility of it, because of climate change, that 99% is becoming more and more plausible. Mm-hmm. What we're not recognizing, though, is the more we go into measures that extend the time through which before we deal with the true issues, the least likely we'll be able to deal with it because it'll be so overwhelming. So for us to run out of water without access to Jordan Lake is better than for us to run out of water after having had access to Jordan Lake and those many more years of business as usual without dealing with climate change. So I feel this is a wake-up call for us. This is climate change. If we're serious about this being a dangerous and a likelihood of us reaching these scenarios that were impossible before, then we've got to get serious about climate change.
Mark, I just want to say why I voted against that resolution. That's because I still have very deep concerns about AWASA's business plan and the way that they conduct, how they work not only with us, but you know, decisions that they've made and how it affects our work towards conservation and our mindset about our water use and in drought conditions and the leveling for us. But where I disagree about the allocation in level one, and being a former New Yorker, I can't help but look just at the conditions in the greater metropolitan New York, New Jersey area over the last 2 weeks with Sandy and having relatives who live in what used to be Far Rockaway. Things happen, and Sammy's exactly right. You know, climate change is here. 40 years ago when they talked about it, we all really thought, okay, hurricanes, we know what that's like. The fact is we live in a coastal state. There could be a multiple of things that could occur that has nothing to do with how much we conserve. And we just don't even know what those things could be. So to me, I have to separate in my mind the distaste for the AWASA business model in general from what I perceive as making sure that there's, under the current rules, the access to emergency water allocation that we want. And that comes first. I'm hoping that over time the work that we do not only will change rules but will expand AWASA's ability to create programs that we're looking for. So that's the decision I made.
I hear you. And let me say, AWASA was perfectly prepared in 2002 and 2003 in the depths of the drought to run a pipeline to the Jordan to the Haw River to ensure that our community did not run out of water and that the University of North Carolina did not have to shut down.
And you didn't start
saying that. And that during the depths of that drought, not during the depths of the drought. Right now, not in a drought, when we're at above 90% capacity in our reservoirs, we consume something like 13 million gallons a day in the Chapel Hill Carrboro area.
Eight million
gallons a day. So during the depths of the drought, the amount of water coming down the Haw River at the old Greensboro Highway Bridge where we would have put that intake was like 5 million gallons an hour. That is a lot of capacity, a huge, huge, huge amount of capacity. The amount of water that we would have had to pump at that time out of the Haw River in the depths of the drought when the Haw River was as low as it ever anyone has ever seen it would have been something like less than 5% of the flow of that river. We had a plan. It was feasible. It was not cheap, but we could have done it. And with minimal impact on the flow of the river.
And you know what happened? I got married, and the day I got married, the drought broke,
and we couldn't do anything outside. So if I hadn't gotten married, the draft probably still would have been over. But 10 years ago, I remember it was in the draft, and the sky just...
Well, hopefully for James' sake, we won't have to call on that happening again.
Yeah,
but
that's right. Yeah, I don't think we'd be able to do that again. Yeah.
All right. I believe that brings us to our next item on the agenda, which hopefully we will make through it.
Can I inquire whether we might have room on next week's agenda?
Task force is meeting tomorrow.
Oh, yes, so we have to do this. So but what about for the next one?
For
what
which
about
one? The next? The EAB can wait. And I.
Okay.
Well, actually, we're not talking. I mean, I think we need to refer it back to EAB based on what Dan said about them making more specific recommendations, because EAB hasn't met again to come up with those recommendations other than what.
Okay, so we can talk at least that far. Okay.
So we are. So are you? You're anticipating that we're not going to take up the solid waste item. Is that what you're saying?
That we're going to long enough to make a referral.
Yeah.
Can do it now.
So we're actually going to make George wait even longer to not have a discussion about it.
Well, why don't we do it now and move to refer back the EAP for specific recommendations?
He's been here for like 3 hours.
He's enjoying himself.
He says he's 3 hours closer to retirement now than before, so it's all right. All right, so move. You're moving to
refer it back to EAB to talk about some specific recommendations based on,
including some new ideas that Sammy put out in regard to how pay-as-you-throw might work.
Yeah, I would like.
And the recycling.
Okay.
With the idea.
All right. It's been moved.
When would this come back to us?
Well, EAB, I don't know if we're meeting, and Randy's not here, if we're meeting.
I mean, near future?
We usually meet the first Thursday of the month.
So come back.
So January.
Next year.
In January, I would imagine. It's
December.
Okay.
Okay. Kathy doesn't know what
Sammy
said for the motion.
Do you want that motion to just include Thursday? Forwarding Sammy's email?
Yes.
Sammy's email?
Okay.
Third
so moved by Michelle, I think, actually, and seconded by Sammy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We are going to take up the Rogers Road Task Force item in 3 minutes from now.
It's usually the third Thursday.
Alderman Johnson and Slade are your task force representatives, and I don't know if you wanted to, how you want to proceed. Do you want to give an introduction? You want me to give a staff report?
I just want to thank you for putting together such a good report and the PowerPoint. I've seen it. I think it's pretty thorough. Thanks, David.
You want me to just kind of blow through some of the highlights then? What I'll do in the interest of time is I'll just hit the highlights. I think a lot of it's outlined in your staff reports, but basically we'll talk about funding for the community center as well as the concept for an Orange County sewer district. And then I also need to talk a little bit about Chapel Hill's annexations and a letter from the UNC Center for Civil Rights with respect to the sewer connections. When the managers got together at the direction of the task force, what we looked at is, okay, how are we going to pay for the community center as well as how can we pay for sewer? And, of course, back on September the 18th, you all had allocated $900,000. And so we still have that money that you've allocated. But I think Chapel Hill, the direction from Chapel Hill, wasn't quite as clear as Carrboro. And, of course, the Orange County Board stepped forward and said that they'd fund the community center. Where we stand today is that Orange County has agreed to provide the upfront funding for the design and construction of the community center. The land would be donated by Habitat for Humanity. The community center would be owned by Orange County and leased to the Rogers Youth Bank Neighborhood Association for $1 a year. The cost is estimated to be somewhere between $500,000 and $650,000. And what we are proposing, the managers are proposing, that the cost-sharing agreement would follow the current Green Track payment schedule, whereas Orange County and Chapel Hill pay 43% apiece, Carrboro pays 14%. And right now in our budget, Orange County and Chapel Hill both pay, through their budgets, $90,549 a year. Carrboro pays $29,524. So we think if we continue to make those payments into future years, that we could repay Orange County in about 2.5 to 3 years and get the community center done sooner rather than later with no budgetary impact, because the current Green Track payments were scheduled to be paid off this year. So any questions about that one?
And that's for the community center.
That's community center.
Building a community center is one thing. Running a community center is another. When I looked at the business plan and I saw how they were planning on, like, paying to run it, for one thing, there was a large portion, just assuming that grants, that people would get grants of over $169,000, and then room rental. I don't want to be a naysayer, but it seems to me that we're setting ourselves up for very quickly being asked for operational funds, which is not just staffing and programming, but utilities and buses, and it's a big undertaking. I also, and maybe we can talk about this later, I don't understand two community centers being built in the same area. I know that St. Paul's is planning on building a community center there, and I don't get the two community centers. It's not that I don't want to do something for Rogers Road. I just look at this and I think, okay, everybody wants to do the right thing, and by everybody wanting to do the right thing, are we going to set ourselves up in kind of an untenable financial situation? I don't know.
I can speak to that. Sammy, you can jump in if you remember something in addition. The folks from RENA at the last task force meeting and the one right before that indicated that St. Paul said that RENA could use their community center when they weren't using it, which doesn't leave RENA very many options to run programs, because their understanding is St. Paul is going to be using that space a lot of the time. So, you know, I don't think Sammy or I are clear about how much they're willing to collaborate with one another or how much there's actually capacity to do that.
But who's St. Paul's going to be serving? Are they going to be serving the people in that community? I would imagine that would be one of their target groups.
Could I interject?
Well, they have a broader mandate too. I mean, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, there is a community that that St. Paul's already is
right.
invested in. But go ahead.
There are at least two significant issues that we've pointed out. The attorneys met and discussed this, and one of the this is the first time I've heard that it was understood that the county would own the building. That was not clear to me, but I sort of assumed in my memo that was likely to be. The case. So I take it the proposal is that Habitat would donate lots to the county and the county would then construct a building on it. But in order to do that, y'all are familiar with the bid laws. The county, I mean, the attorneys are clear that the county can't just write a check to somebody to build a building without going through the building laws. I mean, they can't just say Habitat. Well, I understand that Habitat was not intending to build it anyway because Habitat is not a commercial contractor. So the intent is to somehow turn it over to Habitat and have them contract with somebody, but they can't circumvent the bid laws by doing that. So that model, so to speak, won't work legally. It's not to say they can't achieve this. The objective can certainly be achieved, but not the way it's being proposed. That's one concern. The other concern is apparently the intention is, obviously the county can contract with any agency like we contract with all kinds of social services agencies, to do specific things, but the county cannot, at least in our collective judgment, the county cannot just turn over the building to RENA and say, here's the building, go do with it what you want to do with it. I mean, it has to be, you know, these are public funds and it has to be operated. I mean, they could contract with RENA or any other organization, but presumably RENA to do something specific, but the county would have to be, as the governmental agency, would have to be sort of in charge of what the money is going for. They can't just...
They'd have to have a performance agreement of some kind.
Which they presented in the last meeting, task force meeting.
They presented, what I saw was a sort of pro forma model performance agreement, kind of like we use for our rather, you know, the appropriations we make annually to all these various service organizations. But, at least in my judgment, I don't think you can essentially turn over a $500,000 building to an entity and just say, go do with it what you want to do. It seems to me there has to be, and then expect that they're going to, I mean, that's aside from the practical issues of the county was clear when I listened to their meeting that they were not intending to put any additional funds into it. They basically, that was the concept of the county building a building and then giving it to an organization to have it be their building. I think RENA looks at it as their building and their programming, and they're talking about selling memberships to a public building. Doesn't work. I mean, there's ways to work it, but I think the model that has been suggested, I think the attorneys are in agreement, won't work.
So it's not that nothing can happen.
No. It's
sorts of things can't happen. We just need different
just not,
avenues.
It's not as simple as they're kind of.
Yes, I think the concept that this building is ready to go and we're all ready to start construction on it, I think, is a little premature. I mean, I think. Obviously, I mean, there's a simple model that can work where the county owns the building and contracts with RENA to run programs but is ultimately responsible for, I mean, they work out who's going to finance and how all that sort of thing is going to take place. But you can't just turn over a public building to a private entity and hope that they can fund whatever programs they want to in it. I don't think that's legally possible.
And that was just something I wanted to be clear on. Is it correct that the county's going to own the building even though the land's going to be annexed into Chapel Hill?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much, I think. Is that possible right there?
I just, that wasn't clear to me because I knew they were annexing, or they requested that this area be annexed into Chapel Hill.
I mean, that's a separate legal issue because you can't annex two lots out of a subdivision without annexing the whole subdivision. The rest of the subdivision is not going to petition for annexation. So annexing that into Chapel Hill seems to me...
Even through voluntary annexation?
Voluntary annexation. Assuming it's non-contiguous, that is my understanding that it is. I don't know. I don't know exactly where those lots are. But if they are not contiguous to the existing boundary, if it's a so-called non-contiguous annexation, the limitation is that if you annex lots in a subdivision, you can't annex some lots in a subdivision in a non-contiguous annexation without annexing the whole, all of the lots under the state statutes. So that creates that as an issue. Now, obviously, it doesn't have to be annexed in order for the for the three entities to join in running, you know, putting up a community center and operating the program and all funding it and all that sort of stuff. But
it might matter to Chapel Hill depending on the funding sources they're planning on using. But
well,
I mean, in other words, community development block grant money, for example, can only be spent within the jurisdiction, within the corporate limits of Chapel Hill, apparently.
My understanding, I mean, that may be an objection. My understanding of the concern that Chapel Hill had expressed, the attorney had expressed, was that for the extension of sewer lines to areas could only be done to areas that were annexed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a separate issue. But in terms of, I mean, there's plenty of statutory authority to run a community center / recreational facility and run programs or community development programs or whatever you want out of it. And we could, I mean, the county can do it on its own, or we can have a tripartite agreement of the three entities, or two entities could do it. And the fact of where it's located is not a problem. But as I say, the problems that we've identified is they can't just appropriate money and give it to Habitat and say, Habitat, you construct a building, because that's that we would own, because that's obviously circumventing the building bidding laws. Well,
has it been explored to go into partnership with St. Paul's and build a bigger community center, and so that there would be space for RENA to use and other community groups to use on a regular basis? It seems to me that from an outside perspective, if you just kind of flew over and you said, what? This community doesn't have a lot of community centers. Here are two on the same road, kind of, and both going after the same group of kids, I'm sure, although both going after larger groups. It doesn't make sense. And it seems like maybe if some kind of partnership could be entered into with St. Paul's and build something bigger so that both groups could have more space and there would be more opportunities, that somehow, I'm tired and I can't make it make perfect sense, but just on the surface it seems like a partnership there. I think there may be some, I don't want to see infrastructure decisions made for political reasons. No,
well, then you better get out of local government.
I know.
I'm just teasing, Jack.
You know,
I do get your point.
You get my point.
Well, additionally,
there's a way we can help that move.
And additionally, a lot of that money could be used to enhance programs and expand programs instead of putting into bricks and mortar, duplicating bricks and mortar. Thank you, Jackie.
Dan.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about this in number 2C, the notion of selling the green tract, the jointly owned green tract for this purpose. And I have a number of concerns about that. I originally had four, but I've already forgotten one. And hopefully I'll still remember all three before I finish talking. So I'll start with the narrowest to the broadest. So the first is that the suggestion is that we would sell a jointly owned asset in order to create a county-owned asset. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for the right purpose, but it is a concern. And, you know, when I think about that neighborhood that, you know, once the sewer's in, once the landfill's closed, that neighborhood's going to start changing. And 20 years from now, there may not be RENA. You know, there may not be any of the kind of stuff we now associate with that neighborhood because of gentrification and redevelopment or new development. And the kinds of development that the people who've suffered the landfill will profit from, you know, will finally get their due financially. You know, so then we have the county with this community center that's a county recreation facility based on our asset. So that's kind of a very narrow point about what's proposed. I'm also concerned about, generally speaking, about the idea of selling public assets, particularly land, in any case. And I can talk more about the land thing in a minute. So I think we need to be really careful about, especially, you know, if it's selling first, you know, a specific program and not with a, you know, real eye to building stronger assets for the future. Like, we don't have a lot of public assets in this community, and I think we need to be good stewards of what we have. And in this particular case, the question is raised by this proposal, well, so we want to sell a public asset to finance this community center. Why the Green Tract? Because that's the nearest one? Because it's jointly owned? What is it that's special among all the public assets owned by Carrboro, Orange County, and Chapel Hill? I mean, like, why wouldn't it be better, hypothetically, to sell part of Twin Creeks Park site for those same purposes? Or who knows what, right? I mean, there's, you know, and so I guess I'm suggesting that if the idea, broadly speaking, is that a public asset should be sold to finance this, has that really been broadly explored? Even though I kind of think the idea in general is a bad idea, I think we need to be clear about why we're doing it. And the Green Tract currently, that's, you know, a natural, undeveloped area, and the people in that community who deserve this community center and who deserve sewer also deserve natural areas in which to experience nature, just like, say, we in Carrboro can down by Bolin Creek or Morgan Creek in our greenways. And then the final point is to do with that idea of undeveloped land. And I feel like local government in Orange County in particular needs to be owning more undeveloped land, not less. I think in the coming decades, you know, this goes back to our earlier discussion about how we protect water and how we react to climate change and how that's then going to impact on food security. I think our notions of the value of land is going to change, and it could change pretty quickly. And the idea that the highest and best use is, you know, whatever that thing is going up on West Franklin Street currently, or, you know, a bunch of houses or whatever we might build, is going to change, because the highest, best use might, in fact, be no use at all, preserving land so that the earth has the chance to regenerate itself and continue to provide a livable habitat for humans and the other creatures that we're quickly expunging from the planet. So that's just kind of a basic principle for me, that I kind of think we shouldn't be selling undeveloped land. We should be acquiring more of it. I know, obviously, that's a whole other discussion, and, you know, we don't have the money on the table to do that. Anyway, so I have those numerous concerns about that proposal, and think that if it's going to be pursued seriously, it needs to be looked at very broadly and deeply.
Randy and then Lydia.
I just want to come behind Dan and say that, you know, initially with the Green Tract, it was designed to be a space for undeveloped park space. And actually, for Rogers Road, what was looked at in compensation for the landfill, and this is going back, what, 30-something years, was to have park space, not necessarily a community center. So one of the things that, in a mad rush to remedy, you know, a long-suffering issue and community, you know, was to wed those two things together, the request for a community center with, you know, the Green Tract, and I think it was too quickly offered up. And one of my concerns when reading this was, and talking with folks in the community in Chapel Hill, is that the expectation now is that there will be a public school there. And I'm thinking that that's part of what the county is looking at, is, you know, viable land to put yet another school. And because it's, you know, it's in, they're in a partnership, you know, they see that as answering several of their needs at one time, and I feel it's a we're rushing into that too quickly. And I agree with Dan 100% that we're looking at this green track because it's undeveloped. That it's, you know, it's a real easy target.
Lydia and then Sammy.
Yeah, I wanted to address item three in this. I don't know what page it is, but it's right below where Dan was. Talking about investigating the creation of a county sewer district, and it says, for all property owners in the Rogers Road neighborhood and adjoining neighborhoods that are not currently served by a municipal sewer system and would benefit from the infrastructure, I read that to kind of mean that that while we are putting some monies toward providing sewer to the historic Rogers Road properties, that there would be some kind of a sewer district set up for others out there, such as my neighborhood, that don't have sewer, to be able to have a mechanism by which to tie in or work with a WASA to get sewer. That's how I read that. And if that's the case, I'm in full support of setting up some kind of a system by which neighborhoods like mine, I think really Fox Meadow may be the last of the neighborhoods out there that doesn't, you know, isn't on water or sewer, OWASP water or sewer, but to have a mechanism by which that group could work toward eventually bringing it to the neighborhood, not under the same financial structure. But I'm just saying, I think I like that idea. But my question is, it says creation of county sewer district, and I wondered why it wasn't water and sewer district, because, you know, not only our neighborhood doesn't have water, but I know we saw the map last time where water goes to a lot of the Rogers Road properties, but certainly not all of them. So I would suggest that if it's possible to have that district be a water and sewer district.
And did you see Mike's recommendation? I think you provided a recommendation, an alternative to that scenario.
Well, what I presented, it would be what I have assumed they're talking about is a water and sewer district under Chapter 162A, which would be not the same thing as a WASA, but it would be a separate corporate entity. But the governing body of it would be the Orange County Commissioners. I'm familiar with this. They've set up that kind of a district down in Currituck County years ago. I had something to do with it.
Right, because in the end, you talked about the waters, but I know in at least this preliminary, I guess the manager's recommendation, that would be something I think that via what Mike says that it'd be better to be expanded the way that Mike says in his panel.
But the proposal to use special assessments will not work because the special assessment, the statute lists, I don't know, four or five different bases for charging, and none of those bases are going to allow you to differentiate between, you know, historic properties and non-historic properties or that sort of thing. I think what I was suggesting was a different mechanism whereby the district could set up an availability fee, what was the name I came up with, a surface line extension fee, which would be a different fee than OWASA now charges. And OWASA doesn't charge that kind of fee because OWASA doesn't bear the cost of the line extensions. The developers do, so their availability fee doesn't cover that expense. But that if you had set up a district, they could charge that fee. It was when someone signed up, they'd pay the availability fee to OWASA and the other fee to this district. And I think you could probably have greater flexibility in trying to like I said, perhaps have, you know, one fee that would be paid or exempt the first lot, I don't know, the first connection with respect to a tract, for example, so that trying to deal with the issue about if somebody owned a 3 or 4 acre tract and the house has been there for 50 years, they could connect onto it with exempt from that fee, but if they developed the property and built 5 more lots, those additional lots would be connected. Obviously, WASA can't do that, and so the district would be able to set up its own mechanism to accomplish that. But for all other purposes, OWASA would be, you know, I presume would be billing and operating the system, and you just contract with OWASA. So I see that as all very possible to do. I just think it can't be done exactly the way they're proposing. And one of the things that the commissioners sort of assumed and talked about the other evening was using the $900,000 that we paid back, or were in the process of paying back to the county for the other 60 acres that was transferred to them. And attorneys are clear they can't do that for either the community center or the water and sewer extension. They were somehow assuming you could. Clearly you can't, because that's being paid back to the enterprise fund, and that's a statutory limitations on what it can be used for. So so for the same reason we've expressed before, that you can't, that we couldn't fund the sewer extensions out of the enterprise fund, these $900,000 going into the enterprise fund, you can't take it out again and spend it on sewer or the community center. So, but the district does have the ability to levy its bonds. I mean, that's how the system was built in Currituck County. The district itself can issue bonds and, I mean, pay them back over the by various mechanisms for paying them back, including, you know, the payments. So the Carver could, for example, contract with the district to, or pay the district so that it would extend its lines into the Carborough area. And I mean, there's a lot of mechanisms to achieve it. But I just think it can't be done exactly as it's being proposed, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm. What you were talking about, the districts, that can be done. But the 900,000, because it keeps coming up, and we keep hearing from the attorneys that it's not possible.
That's right.
So the one suggestion was that we would pay it out to the governments, and then the governments would turn around and use it for this purpose.
The $900,000 that we're talking about is the several years ago, the communities, the three governments got together and agreed that because the green track, it was paid for out of landfill funds, that that when it was conveyed to the county, that the county had to be sort of paid back from the local governments back to the enterprise fund to pay them back for the 60 acres. And so the point being that those funds have gone back into the enterprise fund from whence they originally came, so to speak. And so as part of the enterprise fund, the statute requires that those funds, landfill funds, which all originally came from tipping fees, have to be spent only on the landfill and can't be spent on the sewer. The theory upon which landfill funds were used to pay for the water system was that there was a close enough connection between the potential degradation of the water supply out there and the operation of the landfill. There is no such connection between the sewer, the extension of the sewer, and so that's why the sewer can't be paid for out of this $900,000. So the $900,000 really is going to be used for closure of the landfill and all those expenditures, which there are apparently several million dollars worth of expenditures to be made. So
there's a use for it anyway, and there's creative way of using it anyway, because we need to use that money anyway, it sounds like. To the point of the green track, I just want to make sure that we're clear and for the public to know that this was one idea that's being explored, a way that was creative to find money.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily it's really valuable for us to get this feedback. And to be clear, that Carborough, we are committed to $900,000 from which we would be paying for that community center. So we're not dependent on this model to have that money, to be clear with the public. Like, we are committed to pay from our general fund if necessary. So I just want to make sure that's clear, because hearing this response, some people might hear it and be like, oh, no, this isn't going to happen. But for Carborough, we're committed. It's a question for our partners. To what degree are they counting on this model to be the means through which to have that money? That's a whole other question.
Dan.
I'm curious to know to what extent you all have gotten into the question of, within the Rogers Road neighborhood, which residents merit public subsidy for their sewer and which ones don't, like what the criteria are that would be applied to that, because I haven't seen or heard anything about that question.
Well, my understanding, the way we've been working is we define the boundaries, and basically houses that have been there since, I forget, there was a cutoff date, are all within, you know, within consideration. There have been.
So it's depending on when the house was built, not when the current owner was there.
Yeah, not tied to that. Or I don't know. It's the space. It's the geography itself. It's not tied to owners.
How long somebody's owned it.
It's just the historic
or whether
area.
Whether they're owning it and renting it out.
Well, it seems to me that both that that's problematic and that you can also leverage our funds by being more discriminating. So let me give you an example to illustrate what I'm talking about. So the landfill is going to close next June. The sewer will not be built by next June. So there's going to be some period of time after the landfill closes in which someone could buy a property on Rogers Road, and then the sewer would come, and they'd be within that boundary. Now, I assume everyone would agree that that person does not merit public subsidy for their sewer. So that's the one extreme. Then the other extreme is someone who's owned their house and lived in it since 1972 and who smells the landfill and has rats and crows and all the stuff we've heard about, you know, for 40 years. And clearly that person merits this, whatever the full subsidy that we might be talking about for sewer. But then there's a whole gray area in between of, like, you know, there's someone who in the last few years has gotten wind that the landfill's closing very soon and that there's a strong push to bring sewer in and has bought a property that they're sitting on, you know, that they're looking for a chance to cash in on that property. I mean, obviously we can't parse it based on someone's motives and why they own their property, but there are ways at getting at things like that in terms of just how long someone's owned a property or whether a property has been owner-occupied or not. And so I'm just suggesting that those are things. I'm not suggesting any answers to that question at this point, but I think it's pretty important to ask those questions. I think it's only fair to the rest of the citizens, you know, that we're not subsidizing people who really have not felt the burden for which we think that subsidy is merited.
We have talked about that a little bit in the task force, and I think more of what we talked about is how, and this is where this came from, how this would potentially be paid for. So, Sammy, I mean, I don't want to speak for you. I think this has come up, and we both agree that we need to figure out some criteria for, you know, that gray area and who actually deserves to get this and who doesn't. I think more of our time has been spent on how are we possibly going to pay for this? Yeah. Because we can start talking about criteria with no money. And we'll definitely take your...
But the criteria is connected to the money because it affects how much money you need.
Yeah, it's true.
On the other hand...
Although not to run the sewer line.
It's also not possible to skip over one house and go to the next one with a sewer extension.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
You extend it where you extend it. Not to say that there's no solution to that either, but I'm just saying it's a complex topic.
It is.
And I think you also, it's maybe also worth recognizing that, you know, some people, probably there's somebody up there who inherited a house 5 years ago and has only been living there for 5 years, but whose grandma lived there for 35 years before that, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, presumably that's a... Right. Anyway, just to point out the levels of complexity.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know that we do. I think you needed feedback and you just got it. So thank you all for your service on this committee.
I'm sorry that it's such critical thing.
Yeah, you know, and this is one of those times when it can really be a pain to have such a talented lawyer on our staff.
You should come to our meetings.
It'd be so much simpler to have somebody who doesn't know what he's doing, Mike.
It's really not that we don't care.
All of this can be accomplished. It just, yeah. I guess the concern that I heard from the Orange County meeting was full speed ahead with this program when that particular program is not going to fly.
The community center or the
district, the way it's, I mean, with the special assessments and all that, it, you know,
There's more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah, and might I suggest that maybe the attorney should attend those meetings before
we save you.
Or at the very least, the next one.
Right.
You know. My understanding was that the subject was that each local government component of the Assembly of Governments was to consider this, and then it's going to be. I thought I understood that from listening to the county commissioners meeting that this is going to be coming up on the December 6th on the Assembly of Governments for some sort of, I don't know what they're proposing to do, but I mean that this topic is coming back to the
more uncomfortable shifting around in seats. Yes. All right. Well,
are you coming tomorrow?
Where is the meeting?
It is.
I mean, at the Solid Waste Administrative Office on Eubanks Road. What time is it?
The reason I asked for the other attorneys to meet was because I wanted to make sure that I'm not the only one looking at this and went, whoa, and I'm not.
Right.
The other attorneys have the same reaction to the motivation.
Yeah.
3:30.
All right. Well, it looks like Jackie is moving to adjourn. And Mr. Attorney, we hope that you'll be able to be at the next meeting, or if not that, then at least the meeting after that of the Roger Road Task Force.
Can I say something?
We were going to do Kathy's reevaluation tonight, so let's try to do it next week if we can.
Yes. Right. All right. Is there a second for Jackie's motion for the door? All those in favor, so you can probably say aye. All opposed, matter passes unanimously. Thanks very much.
The solid waste.